Goodman Theater Artistic Director Bob Falls, Department of Cultural Affairs Head Michelle Boone, and hip-hop artist Joey Perp. And now, here's your host, a man who wore swim trunks to work today, Justin Kaufman.
What can I say? I like the lining. Hello, everybody. Good evening. How you doing? This is Justin Kaufman. It's a download here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight in this beautiful night. I know we got some rain on the way, but I got to say, what an amazing couple of nights here in Chicago. Just being a part of Michigan Avenue, watching all of the people stream up and down. It's obviously summer, and Chicago is doing it in the right way. We're going to have a conversation tonight with Michelle Boone. She is the commissioner of the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. We're going to talk with her about festival season. It begins, really, if you think about it. This is the weekend that we're going to start with street festivals. This is the weekend that more and more people are going to be looking for things to do. June is usually the kickoff. It usually kicks off with the Blues Festival, which is next weekend. We'll talk with Commissioner Boone about that and the Fifth Star Awards, giving awards to some of the best, or I guess it would say the people who are making contributions in the arts and culture here in Chicago. So we will talk with Commissioner Boone coming up here after the news at 7:30. My guest tonight at the big table, Robert Falls, Tony Award winner, multiple Tony Award winner, one of the best theater directors in this country, and he resides here in Chicago as the artistic director at the Goodman Theater. He's celebrating his 30th anniversary. How about that? And, you know, 30th anniversary at the Goodman, but about almost 40 years in Chicago theater. We'll talk with Mr. Falls about his career, his illustrious career in his new play, and his fifth collaboration with playwright Rebecca Gilman. I mean, these are powerhouse names. Soup, Stews, and Casseroles, 1976 is on stage. Robert Falls is the director. I can't wait to talk to him. There's so much we can talk about, not just about his career, but about where theater's at, the relationship Chicago has to Broadway. He's it. He's been it for years. We'll continue. It's great to have him here. It's great to have him as a treasure here in Chicago, and we'll talk with him about his career and theater coming up at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock. We'll shift gears. I'm really excited about this, Pete. Joey Perp, hip-hop artist, part of the Save Money crew with Chance the Rapper and Vic Mensa, is in studio tonight. Today, he dropped his album, I Drops. That's how you have to say, that's how it's spelled, but it's I Drops. Pitchfork said best new music. It's blowing up. Everybody loves the new music that Joey Perp put out. We'll talk about his life growing up in Chicago, his music being part of the Save Money crew, and just the explosion of not only think about all of the attention that Chicago hip hop artists are getting from Chance the Rapper down, but just about the music that's being made here. I mean, this is I'm telling people who may not be hip hop fans that people are going to look back in the next 20 years from now and look back to the time right now and say, oh, that's a Chicago sound. It's happening all around us, and Joey Perp is a part of it. His new album drops, and he is on the download tonight. How about that? In studio. That's awesome. We're like what's the guy in Sway? We're Sway for Chicago, AM radio. Sway's more of an FM New York guy. Also, Nick Houseman, our wrestling correspondent, is back. He got a gig, Pete. He is doing a new podcast with Bret the Hitman Hart.
What?
From the WWF, yeah.
How'd that come up?
He's going to tell us.
All right.
He got it. He's doing a podcast with Bret Hart called Bret Hart Radio. And, I mean, come on. Like, I love having Nick on because we just talk about – all I do is just throw out, where's this 80s wrestler? Where's this guy? Now he can tell us all about Bret Hart. That's kind of the coolest thing ever, right? I want to know what's up with Bret the Hitman Hart, right? Oh, man.
Can't wait.
And, of course, it's Friday night, and I know you're all waiting. Bated breath. It's The Frying Pan, 10 o'clock tonight. Steve Gadlin will be here. He was on Shark Tank with IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, and he brings his newest inventions and innovations to us before he brings them to his boss, Mark Cuban, to workshop it, to see what Download Nation thinks. 312-981-7200. Yay or nay? I mean, don't tell me now. We haven't told you the idea. I don't even know the idea. All I know is that Steve is very excited about this week. He always gets excited. Usually around Thursday, I start getting text. And it's, you know, like, and he doesn't tell me the idea. I don't get the idea up front. And I like it that way because I feel like far too often I'd be like, and it may cloud his judgment. You know what I mean? Or maybe I said, what if you did this? And that just I want him to come in as this is a pure workshop. I was out at Bike to Drive on Sunday, emceeing MB Bike to Drive, and there were two different people in the park were like, hey, Frying Pan, Friday night.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, they hate it or they love it?
You know, it remains to be seen. But
they knew it.
They knew it. So that gives you an idea of the power that the Frying Pan has.
I love it.
847 just wrote in, I don't know what the idea is, but I'll bet it sucks. Come on, man.
We don't know that.
Come on.
This
I expect
could be the one.
More. I expect more from the Download Nation. You got to take it at face value. You got to ask questions. We have to help Steve become a better inventor, a better innovator. We can't just say, it sucks 3 hours before we even hear the idea, right? I mean, what's that? That's not helping anybody. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier tonight. Production by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. You don't usually get first baseman versus first baseman. Usually they might do like pitcher versus pitcher. I mean, you probably, I don't know who's pitching tomorrow, but they got a Grinky on that squad, you know? So maybe maybe he's not pitching. Arrieta is going Sunday, you said?
Yeah, Hamill tomorrow, Arrieta on Sunday.
Is Hamill okay? Is his hammy okay?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm nervous because I'm going to the game on Sunday, as are you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That tomorrow's going to get rained out or something, and they're going to push Hamill back. Hey, Hamill's fine,
fine.
You know, I want to see Arrieta.
It'll be more like, and looks like a minor league call-up for today is going to be Jack Thompson. He's a left-hander journeyman. He's 46 years old, knuckleballer. You'll be like, oh, come on, man. All right, now it's time for the carryout here on The Download. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you don't have to. Today's top story is the city of Chicago released over 100 videos involved with police shootings and uses of force. This, of course, is in response to the mounting pressure for the mayor to be more transparent. Most of the videos show police on the scene after an incident, with a few of them actually showing force. So if you like shaky videos or police officers standing still, and this is better than Netflix. But the big issue here, of course, transparency. These videos, and I haven't watched them all, show police officers in the line of duty. Nothing's really out of the ordinary. Nothing screams misconduct. I mean, there's even a taser involved. So score one for the police. I don't know about you, but they should make North Avenue Beach just a standalone channel. After another fight today, it seems like fighting and littering are the new pastimes for beachgoers in the Chicago area. Fighting at the beach. It's the new fighting at the park. I mean, if you're going to fight at the beach, at least do it in the water. And get a guy up on your shoulders, you know? Let's get some chicken fights going on. Gang chicken fights. I like it. The Guardian newspaper is reporting that Chicago, among other cities, cheated in their testing of lead in water. I guess they have been prematurely flushing or something like that. That's always good to know that our officials seem to be going out of their way to cheat on tests, especially in this situation where lead has been associated with giving kids learning disabilities, which would make them more prone to cheat on tests. Could it be that the inspectors have had too much lead in their water? Ow, my brain hurts. Ex-FIFA head Sepp Blatter and his buddies allegedly paid themselves $80 million in bonuses over the past 5 years. And you thought your boss sneaking out early on a Friday was egregious. Google announced today that one of their computers wrote a song. Yep, their artificial intelligence was able to make a 90-second song. Hey, that's amazing. And what's more amazing is that the song was quickly given to Britney Spears. That's my computerized Britney Spears right there. Also, Google said they're teaching their self-driving car to assert itself more. Great, just what we need, an aggressive self-driving car. Come on, lady, you're killing me here. Honk, honk, honk. A new study says that long-term marijuana use is as bad for you as not flossing.
Yep, I guess the only big takeaway from chronic use is gum disease. So pot smokers, brush your teeth. For a number of reasons. I can smell it. In weather, it's getting ridiculous out there. So nice. It's like chilled box wine nice. In sports, the Cubs won again. Yawn. At this point, it'd be more exciting if they lost a couple times. John Lackey was unstoppable today after Hendricks was unstoppable yesterday. And Lester before that. And oh yeah, Arrieta before that. Come on. This is getting filthy. The White Sox are in the Motor City for a big weekend series against the Tigers. This is the moment to make a statement. A sweep of the Tigers would do wonders for us, the fans. I mean, our psyches. We're just so chaotic. We want to believe. There's talk the Sox are interested in Padres starting pitcher James Shields. He just gave up 10 runs in his last start and was called an embarrassment by the Padres owner. So, yeah, bring him to Chicago. Golden State beat up on the Cavaliers yesterday to take a 1-0 series lead in the NBA Finals. Steve Kerr got so mad on the sidelines that he punched and broke his clipboard last night. Yeah. Didn't Steve Kerr get punched by Michael Jordan in a practice? Remember that? Yeah. So maybe he learned it from watching Michael Jordan. I learned it from watching you, Dad. The Bears signed Nate Chandler, no relation to Chris, to be backup offensive lineman. They didn't go with Jake Long, who was also being considered. And that sucks for me because I already sent my first in long posters to the printers. Might have been a little premature. And finally tonight, French researchers are hinting that the Zika virus may be transmitted by kissing and oral sex. So have a great weekend, Chicago. That's the carryout for June 3rd, 2016. Hey, did you order the large Coke? Good, because we put in way too much ice. There's like no soda in there. It's a trick we use.
More to come. Commissioner Michelle Boone from the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events is going to join us to talk about the kickoff to festival season, as well as the Fifth Star Awards. Also at 8 o'clock, it's the Big Table with Robert Falls. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Coming up, Michelle Boone from the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events will join us here on the download. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well. Happy Friday.
What do you got this weekend? More shed?
You know, you had to bring it up. The saga continues.
Oh, no.
I had the 1-800-GOT-JUNK guys out today. Okay. Very, very nice people.
Okay.
You know, and we're willing to pony up the cash to, mm-hmm. to have them haul it away. The only problem is that this thing, this old shed that we inherited, is so infested with carpenter ants and bugs, they won't take it.
Really? They won't? They won't?
The reason being, they have a policy, and it actually makes sense. I wasn't mad at them. They won't put it in the truck because some of the stuff that they haul away is salvageable.
Right.
So they don't want my bugs commingling with the salvageable stuff.
Right.
So
what are you going to do? I mean, you're pretty much
Thinking at this point, I'm just going to throw a whole bunch of gas on it.
Yeah.
And if my neighbor's backyard burns down in the
process,
so be it.
Yeah. If you could even do a news story on your own, like block fire.
Invite the kids. We'll make s'mores.
Well, you didn't hear it here, you know.
Joking.
You're just working around.
I'm joking.
That's right. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at the Big Table, 8 o'clock. Goodman Theater's artistic director, Robert Falls. We're going to talk about his 30-year anniversary, his new play, collaborating with Rebecca Gilman, what makes a great theater director, the connection between Broadway and Chicago. So much to talk about. And we'll do that at 8 o'clock with Robert Falls in studio, my guest at the Big Table. Well, this week, the Fifth Star Awards were announced. This is a new initiative from the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events to honor those who make a cultural impact on the city of Chicago. This, plus the fact that this weekend kicks off festival season in Chicago with the Gospel Fest and street festivals like Due Division. It's a perfect time to welcome Michelle Boone, the Commissioner of the City of Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, to the download. Commissioner Boone, thanks for being here.
Sure thing. How are you, Justin?
I'm good. So let's talk about Fifth Star Awards. I love this concept. It's fairly new. But this is a festival that, I mean, I think I got it right, that honors people who are making significant contributions to Chicago's arts and culture.
Exactly. It started with a conversation I was having with the mayor. We both were struck that the city really didn't have a program that paid tribute or honored the really deep bench that we have of a number of luminaries that have not only been Chicago art stars, but have, through their work, really had an impact around the world. And so if I like to think of the Fifth Star as kind of a combination of the Kennedy Center honors, but mm-hmm. with the hipness and the coolness of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
Yeah, well, I don't know how hip and cool the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. I don't know if you've watched that at any time recently. But it is interesting because we never really had that before. I mean, there's been a lot of private institutions that will do things like that.
We launched it 2 years ago, and this year's lineup featuring, of course, blues legend Buddy Guy. How
oh,
could
that's
it be
great.
That
yeah.
Chicago has never paid tribute to Buddy Guy? Famed photographer Victor Skribneski.
Mm-hmm.
He's photographed some of the most beautiful women in the world and is credited with launching the career of Cindy Crawford. Black Ensemble Theater founder Jackie Taylor for 40 years.
Love Jackie, yeah.
She's been bringing fantastic musical theater to audiences in Chicago, and Black Ensemble probably has the most diverse audience of any theater in Chicago. The founder of the National Museum of Mexican Art, Carlos Tortolero, mm-hmm. will be honored. And then we always include an institution, and this year's institution will be the Second City.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, that's a good lineup, and I'm sorry I had last year's lineup.
It's a fantastic lineup. So the event is this September 14th, Wednesday. It's a free public celebration. We invite all Chicagoans to come out and enjoy a night of really, really fantastic performances and tributes. Last year we had tributes, even our First Lady, Michelle Obama, paid tribute to Ella Jenkins, one of the honorees that you mentioned earlier. Bono sent in a video tribute to Norm Wiener from WXRT. So it really shows the vast reach that Chicagoans have made in the art world.
How do you choose the honorees?
Well, you know, we start with members of our staff and some other kind of cultural advisors that we have on our Cultural Advisory Council. And we start with just kind of this long list of people that are in music, theater, dance, the visual arts, literature, film, culinary even. Mm-hmm. And just try and do this match of who hasn't been honored yet that we really should recognize. Who's going to make for a good show? You know, that's part of it, too, that we're putting on a good show. And it's a really, really tough decision to make. But it's also, you know, who's available. We want to make sure that we're presenting flowers to people while they're still with us. So we're mindful of that. But, it's a fun process to try and find that balance of people that represent the arts or different segments of the arts, people that are going to attract an audience that, you know, we know that Chicagoans will enjoy coming out to celebrate and pay tribute to, and then those that we can build a really entertaining show around.
Let me ask you about the Fifth Star, the concept. I love the concept of the Chicago flag and what it represents. Talk about why you call this the Fifth Star Awards.
Yeah, so the idea is that, the Chicago flag has four stars to commemorate or denote significant milestones in our city's history. And if there ever were to be a fifth star added to the flag, we'd like to think that it would be for the arts. And so this is a way for us to think about the people that the fifth star represents or connects with. And these are our own stars, our own art stars. And arts is such an important part of Chicago's identity. We're such a strong cultural city that if there was ever a case made for adding a fifth star to our flag, we'd like to it be to recognize the art, the contributions of the arts.
We're speaking with Commissioner Michelle Boone. She's a commissioner of the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. Obviously, I mentioned in the intro, this is also sort of the unofficial kickoff for festival season here in Chicago. It's June. Usually, I've always remembered sort of the festival kickoff to be when the Blues Fest happens. But this year, the Gospel Fest precedes the Blues Fest. Is there any significance to the change of the Gospel Fest sort of going first?
No, just the timing, just the timing. No master plan behind that. But yeah, actually, you know, the Gospel Fest is happening right now. People are out in Millennium Park enjoying gospel music, and we'll be back out there tomorrow afternoon starting at 4 o'clock through the evening with one of the legends of gospel music, Shirley Caesar, will be one of the headliners among the many others. And then the following weekend, we'll go to Grant Park in the Patrillo Band Show for the Chicago Blues Festival. And then in July, everybody's favorite, Taste of Chicago, will be July 6th through the 10th.
So, I mean, for you guys in this department, because there was a time in Chicago that the Department of Cultural Affairs and the Department of Special Events were different departments. So how hard is it for you guys to be able to do the work of cultural affairs and also do the work of special events? I mean, obviously, the festivals we're talking about, the Blues Fest, the Jazz Fest, Taste of Chicago, Gospel Fest, these are huge undertakings.
They're really huge undertakings, and I think it's a real testament to the talent and commitment of the people that are on the staff. You know, the department presents, produces, and supports about 2,000 program services and events annually. That's an incredible amount. But they manage to do it all with grace and with a smile, and I think it's because everyone really, really loves the work that they do. We all pitch in and help and support one another. Tonight is the Gospel Music Festival, but we also had an exhibition opening at the Chicago Cultural Center of Chicago artist Phyllis Branson. So, you know, it's kind of all hands on deck, and we love making it all happen.
You know, we were just having this conversation yesterday with a musician who's going to be at the Dew Division Street Festival this weekend about Chicago's relationship to street festivals and to outdoor festivals. I mean, obviously there are festivals in every town and city in America, but there's something special about the way that Chicago presents its neighborhood festivals as well as the stuff that's downtown. What about the festivals makes it unique to Chicago?
I think, you know, you can really think about Chicago as being a festival city. In many ways, you know, we were the very first to begin these kind of large-scale festivals. And that inspired lots of the neighborhood festivals, that as the success of the downtown festivals grew, communities began to see this as a viable way in many instances to raise money to support some of the efforts that communities were doing. And people want to have access to the arts in their own neighborhoods. We learned that from the cultural plan process, and we heard loud and clear everyone saying that, you know, it's great that we have so much activity happening downtown, but we also would like to have access to high-quality arts programs in our own communities. And so hats off to those that work really hard to present community-based or neighborhood festivals year-round. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to think about not having one or two multiple festivals happening on any given weekend. So at the same time, this weekend that we're doing the Gospel Music Festival, the legendary 57th Street Art Fair is happening in Hyde Park. And, you know, there'll be other things happening all throughout the summer that give people lots of options. And I think it's what makes Chicago so vibrant and great is that there's so much to do all the time.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned the cultural plan. I just wanted to get an update. Obviously, that was a big issue a couple years back, just about sort of putting together a cultural plan for the city of Chicago, really investing time and energy into giving a strategic plan for how the arts and culture are going to play out here. Where are we in the sort of process or the timeline of the cultural plan?
Right. So the cultural plan was released in 2012. And I think at year one, we did a report back and said, you know, 60% of the initiatives in the cultural plan have been addressed. And that was true. And what I found was that we really wanted to move away from kind of this checklist of reporting back on the work had been done, because it's not really ideas that are kind of, oh, check, one and done, we can move on, that we're still working very hard, and we'll always work very hard on things like arts education, the idea about cultural districts, you know, where we're constantly working on cultivating communities to look at cultural assets in neighborhoods, and how do you rebrand or build on those assets to attract more pedestrian traffic or even community investment to those areas. So I would say that, you know, we're making great strides with the work of the cultural plan, but it's not just our department. There's so many others that have really embraced the plan and are taking a lead on some of the ideas that were embedded in the plan. And so it's been really fun to see how the cultural plan has ignited the imagination of so many art groups and community-based groups to really use art as a tool for improving the quality of life for our citizens.
Let me ask, as we wrap this up, with the city going through so many budget woes and the state, of course, still in a stalemate, and you know, the on the table all the time is about more money to fund the things that are happening here in the city of Chicago. Do you ever, is it ever challenging, or are there concerns about arts funding, especially for the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, being cut when the city faces fiscal trouble?
Well, of course, if you're asking me, there's never enough money for right. the arts, right? But yes, of course. I mean, you know, and it's not just the arts. Many of our social services agencies are also faced with the, you know, depressing economic situation that we're dealing with right now. But, you know, artists are really creative, and we've always found a way to make do with what we have. And I think that's the beauty of the work of the department, that all of our programs are free. And while our residents might be wrestling with rising cost or of housing, trying to, you know, deal with affordable housing or energy or food or, you know, kind of basic mm-hmm. needs and services, it's wonderful to have this option for family entertainment that's free and accessible to all. So, for example, tonight, the Gospel Music Festival is free. It's a great way for the entire family to, you know, pack a lunch, bring your lawn chairs, and come on down and enjoy it. I know the mayor is always quoted with saying the reason why he loves the Night Out in the Parks initiative, which takes the work of landmark institutions such as Chicago Shakespeare Theater or the Joffrey Ballet out into parks all over the city, is that the cost of it is your blanket or your lawn chair.
Yeah. That's a good line, I guess. The cost, but those blankets and lawn chairs can be expensive. I've been to Target recently. Commissioner Michelle Boone is the commissioner of the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events here in the city of Chicago. I'd love to continue the conversation with you. Maybe we'll get you in studio and we can have a conversation about the arts and culture movement here in Chicago and making sure that it continues to be funded. But for now, thank you so much for joining us to talk about the Fifth Star Awards and festival season here on The Download. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Justin, and give my best to Bob Falls. I'll stay tuned in to hear that conversation.
Great.
He's fantastic.
Good jam. Beats by Zim. I would totally go down to the Gospel Fest. That sounds like a jam. I love it. I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, the Chicago festivals. There's nothing like it.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned Taste of Chicago. Taste of Chicago's got a great lineup this year, too.
I like going, you know, I like drinking on a public way. Sitting on Division Street in the middle of it.
I made a joke on when I was at the MB Bike to Drive emceeing it. I was like, this is a, because where the stage was like kind of in the middle of the lawn of the old Petrillo there in Grant Park. I was like, hey, I've sat here many of time. Nobody liked the joke. But it was something like I wanted to add, and I thought better of it. The joke was going to be, you know how many illegal beers I've had sitting right here? And the guy with the cooler walks around and he's like, $3. And me and my 19-year-old friends are like, yeah, Shaka Khan. You know? I went down, this was 2 or 3 years ago. I went to see Shaka Khan.
Yeah.
I was so excited about this. And it was Taste of Chicago. And that's 2 years ago. And I always thought in my head, because I'd worked Blues Fest and Jazz Fest, I'd done live shows from there before, yeah. And I knew that the headliner goes on at dusk. Like, that's how it works, because they need to be done by 10.
Mm-hmm.
So around 8:45, the headliner goes on.
Yeah.
So I thought in my head, well, I'll get down there like 8:30. You know, there's no need for me to rush. You know, so I was like sipping at home, you know, and then I'll take the bus down. And I got down there, and it was still bright out. And I hear, and I'm walking down Monroe, and I hear, I'm every woman, it's all in me.
So good.
And I'm like, wait a second, is she on? Like, I'm like, she's headlining. She should be on at dusk. It's still bright out.
Yeah.
I got there. She's like, it ended. She's like, all right, one more. Like, they moved the timetable
up.
They now do that. And I don't know if it's because they want people out of downtown earlier or what the deal is, but the old rule of the festivals, which was dusk is the headliner, is no longer. I think they're now trying to get people out of the park by, like, 9:30.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It probably makes sense.
Yeah, I just don't think that. I mean, they were quick to sweep everybody out of there, too. They're like, get out. I think I got headbutt by a horse. What is that? Is that horse feeling me up? You know, like the police on the horse coming through Grand Park. Anyway. Yeah, so that was the last time. I didn't go to Taste last year.
Yeah, we walk through Taste usually, you know. Yeah. But not on the big music days necessarily, you know, just got to get my rainbow cone on, stuff like that.
I figure you to be a big turkey leg guy. Just one big turkey leg. I worked at Taste of Chicago.
Like at a restaurant?
Yeah, no, I when I was a kid, when I was 20, 21 years old, I got with a promotional company that was shelling out some good bucks, like $8 an hour, you know, to hand out like certs, lifesavers.
Oh, yeah, one of those?
Like, yeah, like and it worked a tent. Like it had like a spin the wheel kind of thing, and you'd always win certs. Like it was like 1995. It was actually the heat wave year. It was 1995. So it was like super hot down at the Taste of Chicago.
Yeah, that's good. A lot of people with
fresh
breath.
Exactly. Exactly. And I honed my MC skills down there because my job was a sort of circus bark to get them back to the tent. Who here wants some certs, y'all? Like that. I had a costume. I didn't have to dress up. There was one guy who had like had to be in a costume. I was educated.
Now, was it strategically located next to Zorba's, serving the Euros?
Right.
And...
Yeah, right.
I think it was. I think that was part of it. Yeah. Like, whenever we'd see somebody with food, any sort of onions, we'd be like, hey, come
hey,
by
fella,
our tent.
Hey, I see you're there with a nice-looking woman. He just took a bite of that Euro.
I will say this. Certs never got a better spokesperson. They've tried, and I think they were out of business, or maybe they're just not as big as they were in the 90s. Hmm. But, man. There's certs for everybody. Certs everywhere.
That's probably why they are not in business. Give them all away.
We gave them all away at Taste of Chicago. Yeah, so maybe we'll do a whole around Taste of Chicago. Just do fond Taste of working Taste of Chicago stories. Because I'm not going to lie, I was 21 years old in that time.
Yeah.
And me and my roommates were down there. Because my roommates at the time had a 3-bedroom with like 5 roommates.
Yeah.
We all got the same job. So as you can imagine, the pickup scene was out of control. Like, it was just 5 guys and be like, hey, what's up? Oh, yeah, we got an apartment up in Lincoln Square. You should come on up. It was definitely a fun, hot summer. Anyway, Robert Falls coming up at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, hip-hop artist Joey Perp is going to be here. He's part of the Save Money crew, which is Chance the Rapper, Vic Mensa. Joey Perp, who's grew up in Chicago, he's a Chicago artist. He just put out his album today. It's called Eye Drops, and it's blowing up. I mean, it's on Pitchfork. It's best new music. Everything about it, everyone is talking about this great album that he put out, and he is going to be in studio with us at 9 o'clock to talk about what is probably a whirlwind for him today as the whole country learns more about Joey Perp. So we'll talk with Joey coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But right now, my guest at the big table, all right, this is good. Robert Falls is here. The power combo of playwright Rebecca Gilman and director Robert Falls are at it again. The play Soup, Stews, and Casseroles, 1976, just opened up over the Goodman Theater this week, and it's going to run till June 19th. The play is written by Gilman and takes on a familiar topic here in the Midwest: labor, unions, and corporations. What happens when a company in a small town is bought by a corporation and the jobs and job security start to fade away? It's a tale that may be set in 1976, but it's one that resonates today 40 years later. The director of the play is Goodman Artistic Director Robert Falls. Falls is widely considered one of the best directors, theater directors in this country. In addition to his fine work he does at the Goodman Theater, he's also directed on Broadway, Mamet's American Buffalo, Bogosian's Talk Radio, Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night, starring Brian Dennehy. And that's, I mean, we're just scratching the surface. The multiple Tony Award winner, Robert Falls, has made a tremendous impact on American theater, and I'm honored to have him as my guest tonight at the big table. Robert Falls, thanks for being here.
I'm honored to be here and flattered by that introduction. Well, and a little sorry I don't do hip-hop, because that sounds like it's going to be a lot more interesting in about an hour from now.
Let's talk about, I mean, this is your fifth collaboration or your fifth production with Rebecca Gilman, who's an artistic associate at the Goodman. Talk about why you continue to work with Rebecca and direct her.
I think she's one of America's finest playwrights. I just don't think there's a doubt in the world. I mean, Rebecca has been writing plays since the late 1990s, and this is actually, while it's my fifth collaboration as a director, it's the eighth play that she's done at the Goodman. Our last play, Luna Gale, was a multiple Jeff Award-winning production here. It won the Ovation Award for the Outstanding Drama in L.A. It's been produced in about 15 theaters thus far. So she's got a long reach. She's very known throughout the world, produced in London. And I think she has just an extraordinarily unique sensibility when she writes. I mean, the thing about it, and I think the thing that relates to this play we're talking about, is she's simultaneously a political writer working on a sort of epic scale about what's going on in America at any given time. But she always does it with a tremendous sense of humor and humanity, focusing on real people, usually the lives of often working class people or sort of people caught in difficult situations, but also with a tremendous sense of humor and, as I said, humanity.
Do you, I mean, obviously you choose whoever you want to work with, and the artistic associates at the Goodman are world renowned. Do you look, I mean, do you find yourself attracted to certain writers, the way that they work, and find yourself going back to them? Or is it more just sort of like, what's next for Robert Falls?
No, you have to fall in love. I mean, that's the thing. There's a million writers out there. I mean, there's thousands of writers, and every year we receive hundreds of plays by playwrights that are looking to have their plays produced at the Goodman. They're looking to have their plays produced, period. But Rebecca is just someone I fell in love with. There are other writers. You know, Eric Bogosian, you brought up, is a writer. I actually think he and I were in here many, many years ago when we were getting ready to do talk radio. I needed to be around a radio station. I needed to research what you do. So I was in here, I think, for several days.
Just really?
Sort of, yeah, just sort of
so
observing.
So theater directors, you do the same kind of thing as like an actor would do to sort
of... Oh, absolutely. And it's the phrase is, an actor prepares, and as a director, I'm responsible for setting the world. In this particular case, it's 1976. It's a small town called Reynolds, Wisconsin. And one of the things I have to do is really sort of research and you're sitting, the first thing you see when you walk into the theater is a perfect replication of a kitchen that, for example, I grew up in the 1970s.
I was going to ask about that, right?
Yeah, well,
Ashland, Illinois?
Well, actually, at that time, my family was living in Springfield, Illinois.
Okay.
So even though I grew up in the western suburbs, Lombard Villa Park area here, went to high school here, went to the University of Illinois. Around 1976, the year I graduated college, my parents were living in Springfield, and we had a kitchen with the exact avocado, colored refrigerator and matching stove and, sort of yellow walls. And that's what the audience, when they sees when they walk in.
For you, I mean, how important is it to get that right? I mean, as a director.
Oh, that's the first thing you have to do, is you have to get the clothes right, you have to get the environment right, and the actors have to feel that they're living exactly in that world, whether it's a radio station in Cleveland, as talk radio was, or it's rather this kitchen that Rebecca Gilman has created. But, as I was saying, you have to fall in love. And I get these plays, I read them. And it's either there or it isn't. Sometimes it's a little bit like blind dating. I'll give it a read. I'll try it out. I'll bring some actors together in a room. We'll listen to it. But I have to really get into it. And the thing about Rebecca is we now have a sort of shared language after five plays,
right,
where we can sort of finish each other's sentences. And I just believe in her work. I just have a great admiration and belief in her work.
What was it about Soup, Stews, and Casseroles 1976 when you read the play that drew you in? Because this is it's a story that, as I mentioned, I mean, maybe it's set in 1976, but it resonates today. It's about a small town, a company in a small town that gets taken over by a bigger company, and all bets are off in terms of job security, layoffs, all the things that we read about in the newspaper every single day.
Well, it's not only are we reading about it, we're experiencing it en masse. I mean, I think that's one of the major issues right now involved in this particular election, is what has happened to this sort of working middle class? Where have they gone? Jobs have been outsourced. There's tremendous anger. There's frustration. I mean, this country used to be built upon people's labor. I mean, the labor movement used to have a real purpose, a real strength. And over the years, it's been eroded, if not sort of, systematically destroyed. It's no accident that the play is set in a state run by Scott Walker, who's made that one of his priorities during his several terms in Wisconsin. So Rebecca really, as she often does, wants to write about what is going on now. But in a way, it was a little bit too easy, and she wanted to kind of go back to the roots a little bit, to our bicentennial year, a time of tremendous optimism, and sort of counter that with things that were beginning, which includes in this play, as you said, a small town cheese processing factory that's essentially the only game in town. It's a family-run business, and it's taken over by a conglomerate. And it's about the moral dilemmas that happen within this community and would happen in a family. And it's, it sounds actually terribly serious. And, of course, ultimately it has a very serious subject matter. But it's really about people. It's about a family. It's about a mother. It's about the teenage daughter. It's about the father whose job is at risk, who's offered a promotion within the company at the time when other people are being laid off. He's sort of been identified. Will he become a company guy? Will he leave his union? He's looking, as most of us are, to sort of better our lives, better his family's life. But that comes along with a moral dilemma. And that's what makes the play, I think.
I was going to say, as any exciting good play, there has to be a moral dilemma.
Well, and that's what Rebecca Gilman's all about,
right,
is making plays that have terrific moral dilemmas that the characters have to deal with.
The play is called Soup, Stews, and Casseroles, 1976. It just opened pretty much this week at the Goodman Theater. It's going to run till June 19th. Director Robert Falls, who's also the artistic director at the Goodman, is in studio as my guest at the big table. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Robert Falls, the artistic director of the Goodman Theater, celebrating his 30th anniversary as artistic director at the Goodman. It'll be officially next season when it starts.
Yeah,
next
it begins in the fall of 2016.
And he's directing. So. Go ahead, sorry.
No, it's coming up in the fall.
And he's directing Soup, Stews, and Casseroles 1976 at the Goodman right now. Rebecca Gilman's play. It runs till June 19th. 30 years is a tremendous achievement at any job. I mean, in theater as well. I mean, but this is, it's also an anniversary of sorts for you in Chicago because you came here about 40 years ago.
I moved to Chicago. That's what's sort of ironic about working on this play that has 1976 in the title, was that was the year indeed that I moved to Chicago. I had a play. I graduated from the University of Illinois, and I had directed a play as a student. And a number of the actors in that production graduated before me, about a year or two before me, and they came up to Chicago at a time when there were only about, it's hard to imagine now because there's over 200 theaters in Chicago, but there were probably about 14 professional theaters in 1976. They started the Apollo Theater over on Lincoln Avenue was actually where it started, and it was a play called Moon Children. I directed it in college, and then as soon as I graduated, I moved to Chicago because it was a hit play, and I had, at a very young age, this hit play running. So 1976, 40 years, is it feels like yesterday on one hand, but of course it's a very, very long time ago.
What do you remember about the theater, the Chicago theater scene at that point? I mean, you mentioned there was only a handful of professional theaters, but what do you remember about the camaraderie, about what was happening in the late 70s?
Well, Chicago's always had a tremendous camaraderie. I'll tell you, one of the things I remember is that it was Mayor Daley's Chicago. So we were operating a theater on Howard Street, as many people, I get a lot of people to this day come up, and the theater was called Wisdom Bridge Theater.
Course, yeah.
It was the last street in Chicago. It was Howard Street. And, you know, we had to have a sort of regular, I think it was $100 sitting under the cash register, because we would have a fire inspector come by once a month, once every 9 weeks, and you'd sort of have to slip that $100 to him. So Mayor Daley, following, you know, the convention, following some of the disasters of the late 60s, was not a theater fan. It was not a great time. You didn't get a lot of support, which, of course, is the complete opposite, considering we owe his son Richard Daley a tremendous amount for being responsible
right.
for the building of the current Goodman Theater. But in those days, it was a little slippery. there was tremendous camaraderie. The Steppenwolf was beginning. I worked with all those guys. I knew all those guys at that time. You know, Chicago's always been a sense of a community. And even though it was only 14, 15 theaters, it's the same feeling you still get today with like 200 theaters.
You know, for you, I mean, when did you make the, I mean, I guess it's not really a transition, but when did you make the leap to say, okay, I'm going to be, and I want to continue this. I want this to be my career. I want to direct plays.
Yeah.
When did that happen in your career?
Well, I know it sounds strange to say this, but I've always been that way. I was sort of like a kid who was interested in theater I grew up in a small town. I mean, actually, Soup, Stews, and Casseroles is a considerably larger town than the one I grew up in. Downstate Illinois, I grew up in a town of about 1,100 people called Ashland, Illinois. We moved up to Chicago for high school. But I was always putting on plays, like in garages. I would gather my friends. I would sort of see a movie, and we'd decide to make that movie a play that we would put it on a front porch and act it out. So I was always making the kids do that. And I just sort of have continued to do that for like more than 50 years. I acted in high school in the suburbs here. I acted in college. I started directing. I started writing plays. So just inevitably, I was able to move to Chicago and just continue to do what I really love. So I consider myself very, very lucky.
Do you think at all about that, the contrast of being from a small town and moving to such a big town, and how that sort of influenced your worldview?
I do all the time. I mean, I sort of have a mixed background. I mean, my father is a New Yorker. He's an Irish Catholic who grew up on the west side of Manhattan in what now and has always been Hell's Kitchen. So we used to get back maybe every 2 to 3 years to visit his family in New York. But on the other hand, my mother was the farmer's daughter. I mean, she grew up on a farm. Her brothers, my uncles, still run that farm. It's corn and soybean. So I feel like I've always had sort of one foot in a big city and one foot like in a small town. So, you know, it's I've always felt very lucky to have these sort of two opposite sort of environments that I grew up in.
Yeah, and it feels like you might have a leg up when it comes to telling stories, creating stories, directing stories, because those are different stories from, like you mentioned, soybeans and corn, as opposed to, you know, living in Villa Park or even in
Well, I think that's one of the things that you identify with. I mean, my father was an Irish Catholic, and of course, the playwright that I'm most affiliated with, I suppose, is Eugene O'Neill. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't come more Irish Catholic and sort of steeped in guilt and alcoholism and tragedy and guilt. And I think that comes from my father's family. And then, you know, you have a play like this, which is sort of a more of a Protestant sort of Midwestern farming community. And I sort of know that world as well. So it comes back to what we talked about a little earlier, that when you read something, you identify with it. So you know, you just can't help but go with those things that, you know, were formed in your childhood or formed in your background that you're attracted to.
Now, obviously, this is going to be your 30th anniversary coming up this officially when the new season starts in the fall. But talk about what it means to be a part of the Goodman Theater for as long as you have been.
Well, it's a tremendous honor more than anything else. I mean, I just feel, you know, 30 years, like I said it about 40 years, it goes by like a blink of an eye. And I feel very fortunate to have been nurtured and been able to create and to create a family of artists over 30 years in this city that I think is the greatest theater city in the United States. There's no doubt. I've worked in New York. I've worked in London. I've worked around the world. I've been asked often to consider moving out of Chicago to run other theaters. But Chicago is home. And Chicago, it's a tremendous, unpretentious, vital, exciting community of theater goers that are very discerning. And I've just loved my entire life being able to put these plays on for Chicagoans, you know, and it just feels like home. It always has, and I think it always will. And it's just been a privilege to be able to run one of our great theaters and to work with all the people I've been able to work with.
Robert Falls is the artistic director of the Goodman Theater. His play, he's just directed Rebecca Gilman's play, Soup, Stews, and Casseroles, 1976. It's on stage right now, and it's running till June 19th. We'll take a break for the news with Rob Martyr, and we'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. My guest at the big table, artistic director at the Goodman Theater, Robert Falls. He's also directing the show Soup, Stews, and Casseroles, 1976, Rebecca Gilman's play, at the Goodman right now. It runs till June 19th. Before we go any further, what happened with the sign? What was that?
That is a good question. What happened with the sign? You know, I woke up like everybody else and sort of woke up on whatever it was last Saturday or Sunday morning and just sort of, you know, opened up Facebook and there was a photograph of it. You know, this is about 8 in the morning. And it had, for those of you that don't know, I mean, it truly, it looked like halftime at Beyonce, you know, at the Super Bowl.
It really did. It looked like a Chicago fire episode.
It did. It looked like there was just fire shooting out of the top of it. It was like a fireball. You know, I mean, I told my wife, I said, hey, look, the sign's on fire. And she sort of imagined some simple little electrical thing. And indeed, it was spectacular. But it was, you know, the fire department was there instantly. It was taken care of. It was great that it happened at like 5:20 in the morning.
Nobody was hurt,
and the theater wasn't damaged in any way. It was just,
it really was a Facebook moment.
It truly was. It was a sort of viral, well, there the Goodman sign is up in flames for a little bit.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Goodman because, you know, as you mentioned right before the break, you talked about what you love about Chicago, what you love about being here. You know, what are the challenges for being the artistic director of one company for 30 years?
I think that's a good question. I mean, I think it's all about keeping it fresh. It's like anything. It's about, you know, doing a radio show. It's about running a newspaper. It's how do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it exciting? How do you keep it on the edge? I mean, the key to me is we've got a wonderful audience. You know, we've got thousands and thousands of subscribers who make a commitment in advance. We've got a lot of people coming for the first time, single ticket buyers. But you always want to lead them. You know, you want to stay ahead of them. You can't push them over the edge. You've got to know them. But you always want to sort of take them on a journey that is, you know, new for them, that's sort of taking them into an area that they did not expect that they'd be going, which is one of the reasons we do a lot of new plays like Rebecca Gilman's, or when we do a classic play, it usually has a bit of a twist to it. It's got something unusual. And so it keeps it kind of edgy, which I think is exciting.
Are there risks in that sort of pushing the edge and the boundaries, especially
absolutely.
When you have such a loyal following as the Goodman?
Yeah. Well, our audience is really extremely loyal, but you're always going to irritate somebody, which I think is fantastic. You know, otherwise you're boring. You know, once again, it's like unless you can sort of. You know, the thing about coming out of the theater is you just don't want to bore people. I mean, or you just don't want to make it easy for them. You know, I actually don't think theater should be easy. I think theater should be provocative. I think it should be challenging. I mean, I think it's one of the things that our current production of Lorraine Hansberry's kind of neglected masterpiece, The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window, a play that hasn't been seen.
Yeah, we talked about it. Chris Jones was in here. He loved it.
Yeah, he went crazy for it. And it's really the major discovery of the year and maybe of the past decade of a play that has been neglected. Well, that is fantastic. And, you know, Rebecca's play, again, pushes buttons. You know, the you know, it's like the labor movement is you know, it's that means a lot of things to a lot of different people right now. So you want to push buttons, you want to challenge people, you want to put them on the edge. And I think that's not always easy to do. It's very easy to fall into, you know, there are a lot of theaters in the United States, and it's very easy to program, okay, here's a musical, here's a comedy from Broadway, mm-hmm. here's a drama that's been around for 50 years, here's a little play with two actors in it, you know? And a lot of theaters run that way. But the Goodman, I think, is always trying to be adventurous and, you know, in a city with a lot of theaters, tries to take a leadership position.
Do you, I mean, what is the formula or what are you trying to accomplish when you put together a season?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a theme to it? I mean, is there an art to
Well, that's a great,
picking place?
That is a great question. I mean, you know, it is a little bit like, I like to cook, you know, I like to cook for friends. And it's, the analogy is a pretty good one, that you're actually trying to make a meal. You know, you're trying to put together a variety of tastes, something spicy, something sweet. Things can certainly be a little sour, which makes it exciting. You know, I'm very lucky to have all of these extraordinary associate artists. Directors like Steve Scott or Chuck Smith, Brian Dennehy is an actor, is very involved in the theater. And everybody's coming in with their best ideas. And we're looking to put together a season that does have balance. You know, you want to have a play that's, you know, if you have a play that's particularly challenging or a play that has 25 actors, you can't necessarily do another play with 25 actors or another play that is as challenging or as risk-taking. You want to provide people with a really satisfactory meal. So it's just a matter of collaboration and conversation that eventually gets you to putting together a season of plays. You know, in our case, it's almost 9 plays. You want to give a variety of the new, a variety of the old, mm-hmm. and a variety of things that the audience can take away.
The Goodman has had a tremendous relationship with Broadway, obviously with your success on Broadway, your Tony Awards, all that. But talk about the challenges and the push and the pull between the commercial successes of a theater, making sure that you have hits or going to get hits to be part of your season, and being able to serve the audience that's in the space.
Well, fortunately, we never really have to feel as if something's a hit or a failure. I mean, that really is, you know, people don't understand really the concept. It's a little complicated. You know, we work, you know, down on Dearborn Street. We are a nonprofit theater. We're like the symphony orchestra. We're like an opera company. We're like a museum. We're surrounded by theaters, you know, that are bringing in SpongeBob the Musical or, you know, Book of Mormon.
Right,
or we're going to have Hamilton.
Hamilton, right.
Those are commercial projects.
But they're also competition to you.
I actually don't think they are. I think that, you know, what happens is I think that the audiences begat other audiences, particularly downtown. You know, those are big sort of branded musicals that people know about and they want to see, and they're going to make a lot of money for a producer. They've already been branded hits. We're something entirely different. You know, we're doing work, as I said, generally a little challenging, which is generally new, and it's about the art. It's not really about the commerce. And even though a project, you know, production like, Book of Mormon or certainly Hamilton are artistic achievements, it's just not in the same league as to what we do, which is presenting a season of 9 plays as opposed to putting one musical that's going to run in there for 9 months
weeks.
Or 9 years.
Right.
Or 2 weeks.
Talk about the competition. Because I always feel when selecting plays, I didn't really think about this, and Jonathan Barry was in here from Steppenwolf talking about Constellations, and how a lot of people wanted that play, and a lot of other directors like, oh, I wanted to produce that. And it kind of opened my eyes to the idea that there is competition to some of the hotter plays or the newer playwrights, and people, where does a Goodman fit into that? I mean, do you sort of have to compete to get the best work to be on display for a season at the Goodman?
Do we have to compete? You know, one of the things that makes Chicago a great theater community is that it is competitive. You know, that there's Steppenwolf, they're wonderful theaters. Steppenwolf, the Shakespeare Theater, the Court Theater. I mean, I could just go on, Northlight. And these, we all look at each other. And I think that one of the reasons the community is so good is because we challenge each other to do our best possible work. I mean, you know, Constellations is a play that I love. Frankly, the Goodman could have done Constellations if we wanted to do Constellations, but we decided that rather than doing a hugely successful British play, we would do a new play that has not been tried out. And so we're always thrilled when a play like Constellations gets produced brilliantly by another theater company in Chicago. So what's amazing is there generally has not been a great deal of competition when a play comes along. You know, it's every theater has their own vision. You know, every theater has what it
and
does.
It kind of all fits together here.
Well, it fits together for the theater companies themselves, but it also, you know, it's also part of the ecology of theater, that you get classics, you get Shakespeare, you know, you get new plays. Every theater has a sort of specialty about what they do, which makes them a little different, makes us competitive, but we're literally not fighting tooth and nail to get a particular play.
Do you, you know, as we talked about earlier in this interview, just the concept of reading a play and quickly identifying, saying, this is something that I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
You know, talk about what your diet is like when it comes to plays, reading. And you know, like, what, I mean, how many plays are you reading per year? I mean,
I'm always reading plays. I mean, I said to somebody today, God, I would love just to be able to kick back this summer and read a novel of some sort.
Right.
Read a nice spy novel, you know, get in a hammock somewhere.
But you'll do that and be like, this would be a great play.
Oh, there you go. That is true. I would have to think about
it.
No,
it,
I can't escape thinking that way. I mean, you know, that's the last project I did was a 900-page Chilean novel. And I'm the only person in the world that read that and went, boy, this could be a play. And then spent almost a decade kind of bringing it to the Goodman stage, a piece called 2666.
Right.
But I'm reading plays all the time. I'm reading new plays. I'm reading old plays. You know, there are plays that I've spent my entire life thinking about. You know, I'm going to be doing two of them next season as part of my 30th anniversary. Ah, Wilderness, a comedy. It's the only out-and-out comedy by Eugene O'Neill. And one of the greatest plays of all time, Chekhov's Uncle Vanya. Now, these are plays I've been reading since I was a teenager. So I've been thinking about them for my entire life. And then what happens is they sort of whisper in my ear somewhere in the middle of the night and they say, well, now is the time to be done. And that truly is how it works. It just feels like now is the time to do that play. And then on the other hand, a script will arrive in the mail and I'll fall in love. Or Rebecca Gilman will hand me the play she's been working on for 3 years, and I'll say, yes, we've got to do this. So you come about it from a whole different set of directions.
This being your 30th anniversary, do you think about the season differently, about planning it? I mean, do you think, okay, this is my 30th, so it's got to be special. I'm going to go
to
my
favorite. I wish I could, Justin. You know, it would be so wonderful if I could, but I can't. You know, all I can do every year is just try to do the best possible season I can do. You know, it's like I wish I could have said, well, now for my 30th anniversary, I'm going to do the Oresteia, you know.
This is
going to
be my crowning achievement.
I'm going to do Euripides as the crowning achievement, all 12 hours of it or something. But no, you know, you just get up in the morning, you go to work like any other job. I'm lucky I get a chance like you to work on something I love. And, you know, these two plays that I mentioned are two plays I love, and I think they'll be great. But, you know, that's the only way I can work is just sort of just kind of put one foot in front of each other every day, go into a rehearsal room and make plays.
A lot of theater artists work in a way where they jump from one job to another.
Yeah.
They get a 3-month gig. They maybe work on a play for 6 weeks and they're auditioning for something else. Playwrights are like that. Directors are like that as well. You've had a very unusual career in theater where you're at one theater for 30 years and you're able to jump out and do other things, but you've always been able to come back.
I've been very lucky. I've been the luckiest person I know, seriously. I'm just incredibly thankful, as I said, to have the job that I have, to have the relationship to the theater, to our audiences, and to Chicago. But it is true, you know, in the 30 years, and I think that's one of the things that's been able to keep me sort of fresh and keep me alive in the work, is I know I have a home. I know I have a home that's extraordinarily supportive of whatever I want to bring them to do. But I've also had the chance to direct Aida, to work with Elton John on a big Broadway musical. I've had the chance to work with, you know, a lot of amazing people over the years on Broadway, on operas. And those are opportunities that don't come around that often, you know, and it gets me out of Chicago. It gets me out of the Goodman for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And I'm always thrilled to come home, always thrilled to come home. But I think I've been really refreshed by the experience of working in other forms and other theaters.
Let me ask you a question to wrap up about Chicago, because you talked earlier about your relationship to Chicago audiences and about working in Chicago. But you, as you just mentioned, you go 6 to 8 weeks to New York, you come back to
right.
Chicago, and you like to be home. Talk about what the city does to inspire you as a Chicagoan, not just as a artistic director or a director, but as a Chicagoan. What makes this city tick? Why do you stay here?
Well, you know, I guess at this point, you know, I've lived in Chicago since 1976. So I've seen a lot of changes. I've seen a lot of things. And I don't know, you know, obviously we're a city that we're a great city, but we're also a problematic city. We always have been. You know, it's, you know, I'm talking about the early days, you know, under the first Mayor Daley, and think back to sort of the violence of a Chicago convention of 1968. And then I jump forward to the current violence that's taking place around the city. You know, we're a flawed American city, but we are an American city. We have everything. And I find that fascinating. I find that thrilling. I find that despairing. I find it tragic. I find it comic. You know, it's what makes theater great is flaws. It's, you know, Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman is a flawed character. Well, Chicago is a flawed great city.
I was going to say, everything you're saying sounds like you're describing a play.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's Chicago is a play. And the Chicago characters are Shakespearean characters, the people that live here, that work here, that make, you know, that make their lives here. It's always been just an extraordinarily energetic city that has fed me. You know, I mean, just everything about it, the architecture, the music, the people, the comedy scene. I mean, I grew up loving and going to Second City, friends in improvisational comedy. I've got friends who are professional chefs. Some of the great, you know, chefs in Chicago and in the world are here. So, you know, I've been stimulated by creative people, whether it's in comedy, music, or cooking. Or politics. It gets very creative, if not sort of comic, in politics. But it's just ultimately where I'm from. And that's one of the reasons why I've stayed, is because I feel that it has shaped me as an artist and I think as a person.
Robert Falls is the director of Soup, Stews, and Casseroles 1976, which is on stage at the Goodman Theater through June 19th. He's also the artistic director at the Goodman Theater, which he will be celebrating his 30th anniversary. Thank you so much for spending the hour with me here at the Big Table.
Oh, gosh, it was a delight. Thank you.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. That was great. Bob Falls.
Awesome.
I really enjoyed that conversation because, you know, it's very philosophical, but I really like finding out where artists are from and their relationship to the city they live in.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him being in a small town in downstate Illinois and then to be as a kid and to move to Chicago, that, I mean, he has ability to relate to a lot of different type of stories. And I think that that's important. You know, if you're going to be a theater artist and all you know is, oh, I live on the north side of Chicago. That's all you really, that's your worldview.
Mm-hmm.
But to be in a position where you can know the world of rural Illinois, you know, and then at the same time be able to get really urban. I mean, I think that that's got to help you have a great career in theater.
Well, I like what he said just now about, you know, being inspired by all different types of arts, you know, comedy, whatever, you know. I mean, that's inspiring.
And I also love that, you know, I thought about it when he was saying it, but everything he was saying about Chicago being a flawed city reminded me of what he said at the beginning of the interview, which is about plays need moral dilemmas. Chicago is just, I mean, it's just riddled with moral dilemma. Everything about this town and the area we live in is moral dilemmas around money, about violence, about how we live. I mean, it is true. Chicago is a play. So really great to have Bob Falls in here. I mean, what a tremendous
legend.
Yeah, I mean, he's a multiple Tony Award winner and has worked on so many great plays and music. I mean, it's tremendous to think about. Like I said, I mentioned Bogosian's Talk Radio, which is a iconic play, the actual play.
Mm-hmm.
Mamet's American Buffalo, David Mamet. I mean, worked with David Mamet. Eugene O'Neill, I mean, he's like the preeminent. And that comes along with Brian Dennehy. You know, Brian Dennehy, who's an artistic associate at the Goodman, he and Robert Falls, I mean, that's a... And then Rebecca Gilman. Rebecca Gilman is one of America's greatest playwrights. So. All right, we'll shift gears here. We're going to go from Robert Falls to Joey Purp. I'm excited about this, to be able to talk with him on a day that he drops his album. Pitchfork says best new music. You know, we'll talk about what... It must have been a whirlwind today to be so excited about, you know, putting out new music, and then, you know, we'll talk to him about everything that happened. Maybe we'll just do, so what happened at noon Tell me about 2 o'clock. That's a conversation we'll have with Joey coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Of course, it's Friday night. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we will have Steve Gadlin in for Frying Pan. That's right. He won on Shark Tank with IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. Now he brings his new ideas to Mark Cuban, who he has a development deal with. He brings them here to Download. 312-981-7200. It's coming up at 10 o'clock. But right now, well, the new album dropped from Chicago hip-hop artist Joey Perp. It's called Eye Drops. Here's a song, Girls At, featuring Chance the Rapper.
Where all the girls at, with the credit cards and the high heels, the Mercedes Benz with the big wheels, when they hit this jam, they can't sit still, yeah, they know what's up. Where all the girls at, with the Birkin bags and the big house, the Mercedes Benz with the assist out, when they hit this jam, they turn the lights out. Yeah, they know what's up. Polo socks, polo tee, polo bib, polo sheets, photo bins, photo jeep, photo bull office of me. She taking photos of me that she carry all around like rosaries. She said she never did it with the lights on. Baby, we gon' see. She so cow, she no smoke.
There you go, that's a jam. Chicago hip-hop artist Joey Perp has been creating music in Chicago for a few years now. He's part of the Save Money crew that includes Chance, Vic Mensa, Tokyo, and others. The new album's getting great reviews. It's all over Pitchfork today. Got best new music from the Pitchfork music site. Perp grew up in Chicago, moved around from neighborhood to neighborhood. He's got a show on Friday at Metro. Some of the Save Money crew, Sunny Digital, is going to be opening up. Joey Perp in studio with me now. Great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
That's,
man.
I mean, the record is great, man. It's really great. Congratulations on a tremendous work.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about. I mentioned Save Money, and a lot of the WGN radio audience may not be familiar with it, but take us through your career, because you have been a part of an ensemble that is just blowing up here in Chicago. But you know, you've been recording music for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it started at the ground level, and then we kind of just started to gain notoriety in the city, and then it kind of branched out of the city, and now we have a opportunity to have like a broad audience when we drop stuff.
That's really great. I mean, it's an ensemble. I mean, talk about how you guys came together.
It was really just organic, you know. We all like kind of went to school together, went to school with friends of each other growing up
here in Chicago, right?
Yeah, and so and we're from all over the city, so we kind of always had somewhere to go whenever we were anywhere in the city. You know what I mean? We had friends from all over. That's how it started.
For you, I mean, this record, you know, Pitchfork loved it today. They were all over it. But and the Reader had a great profile on you. I mean, mm-hmm. You're getting some great recognition, not just here in Chicago, but around the country. What's that feel like? I mean, for you as a young artist, young hip hop artist, to have so much print.
It's tight, man. It's greatly appreciated, and especially it's starting at home, especially because like Pitchfork is I'm pretty sure they're based here and in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. But to have it be like so much appreciation of the music from home, because it was made from the energy of here. You know what I mean? So it means a lot.
When did you find yourself getting into music?
From a fan standpoint, I've been into music forever. But I guess from a occupational standpoint, like 18, 19, something like that, mm-hmm. a couple years ago.
How old are you now?
22.
22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
What drew you to the Chicago sort of hip hop scene? What was it about this town that helped you, inspired you, that nurtured you as an artist?
Just the energy in general is unique, I feel, and it provides a platform for you to have a perspective and not just kind of be a bystander. You know what I mean? Regardless of how you grow up in Chicago, I feel like everyone has an opinion. No one kind of is like left out of the conversation. You know what I mean? So I think that's what started it, and then hip-hop just being the music of the culture, you know what I mean? It related itself.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways to go in hip-hop in Chicago. I mean, we've seen just in the last 10 years different genres of hip-hop really mm-hmm. explode on the national scene. You talk about the drill scene. But there has been this push to the conscious rap kind of scene that a lot of that your ensemble, Save Money, are I would say are excelling at. Mm-hmm. I mean, you Chance the Rapper, that's essentially he's brought that back to Chicago. So some of the things we heard from Common and Kanye West from a decade ago.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself fitting in? Because I think that you straddle that. I mean, we heard in Girls At, I mean, you got something to say, but it's not necessarily that kind of that tone.
Yeah, I think that I fit kind of in the middle. You know, you can't always be like completely one-sided, especially being young. Chance is a perfect example of that, where the message generally in the music is very positive, but there are still times where his youthful energy and maybe youthful mindset breaks through in the music, and it's things that are fun and that are exceptions to the rule, so to speak. You know what I mean? I think that's what my music is. It's just, it's the truth, and the truth isn't always one-sided. The truth isn't always conscious, and the truth isn't always unconscious.
Is it your truth?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's everyone's truth. No one is completely one-sided.
You grew up in Chicago, but reading the article in the Reader, just about, you jumped around from neighborhood to neighborhood. Talk about growing up here and how ultimately it influenced your music.
I think it was just a matter of being in different places in different environments around different types of people that was advantageous for me, because I learned how to navigate around different personalities. And I think that was the most important thing about bouncing around Chicago.
Like, so the idea of growing up and being in Lincoln Park and then being in Humboldt Park and, mm-hmm. and being around different types of people, and it's helped you with not just your life, but your viewpoint.
Well, yeah, it's helped me because as I continue to be around these same types of people, you know, in my opinion, there's only X amount of types of people in every different person. You know what I mean? But it's just harder to surprise somebody who's seen different types of people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. For you, I mean, obviously, hip hop is a big, I mean, hip hop in Chicago is a big, big category of music. I mean, there's so many artists that are coming out. And one of the things that Chicago seems to be at the forefront of is recording independent music,
mm-hmm.
or just approaching music from an independent standpoint, sort of bypassing the music industry as we used to know it. Where do you stand on that? I mean, for you, recording music and having your own voice and being able to be independent, how important is that for you?
It's really important to me just to control what you're saying and to have clearance over the fact that you speak your own truth and not be swayed by someone else's influence. So that's the main thing that's important. As far as the record industry and like selling music and stuff like that, I don't really have a problem with it. You know what I mean? Because everybody has to sell something, you know, whether you work at the Argo Tea next door or you're this dude selling like little novelty items on the street or somebody who sells a product that's more like intangible, like radio, you know what I mean? Everyone has to sell something. So I don't have a problem with the recording industry. I just think that it's the way that that deals have been structured in the past is kind of exploitive. And that's the thing that has to be talked about. But I think that's just up to the artist to be knowledgeable of what paper he's signing.
Is that really the pushback when we talk about why artists go independent? Artists are recognizing more and more that was a bad deal.
Well, in my opinion, which is very amateur at this point, because we've just now started answering conversations like that with recording companies or whatever. But in my opinion, yeah, I think the only way you're mad about the way that your music being sold is set up is if you're not getting the right percentages or something like that. I don't think anybody's mad that their music is for sale. I think if you're mad, you're mad by the manner of which it went to you. It came back to you. You know what I mean?
We've had a lot of conversations on the show. We've talked a lot about the business of music. One of the things we were just talking about this not too long ago, about the concept that the way to make money or to have a living in music is to tour. That the music and the reason that, you know, you can offer stuff up in SoundCloud and be able to give the music away for free is because that's really marketing.
Mm-hmm.
The music is marketing. Do you agree with that? I mean, is that something that, you know, you're pretty savvy at 22 years old to think about the industry that you're getting into?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely aware that touring is how someone who releases music for free is the, you know, that's how you make your revenue. But ideally, I think everyone wants to achieve a middle ground where they can make money off of the music and maybe not have to tour. You know what I mean? Or they could tour 100% of their year and not necessarily have to make money off the music. I think that everybody's ideal, or at least my ideal situation would be to find a medium. You know what I mean? Because I think that one thing that's neglected is that touring is very strenuous on someone who has a family or a personal life in general, where they don't want to dedicate 100% of their time to their craft the same way everybody else can come home. You know what I mean?
Right.
We don't get to come home for months if we're touring all the time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's a young man's game, but even young people have responsibility.
Exactly. And even just outside of responsibility, you have a responsibility to yourself to be happy. So I don't think anybody wants to be touring 100% of the time, but I also don't think anybody wants to be stuck in the $9.99 box of selling their music online, and that's the only way you can make anything off of it. You know what I mean?
Joey Purps in studio. He's a hip-hop artist here in Chicago. His new record's called Eye Drops, and he just got great reviews today. Pitchfork, best new music. He's got a show at Metro on Friday, June 10th, which will be some of the Save Money crew will be there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in your process. You know, I always ask musicians about how you write your songs. For you, you know, how much of it is collaborating with, musicians to produce the beats? How much of it is coming in first with the lyrics? Talk about your process of putting together your music.
It varies, man. Honestly, a lot of times it's me and a good friend of mine, Knox Fortune. He's a producer and engineer. He, like, recorded all of this album. It's a lot of times it's just me and him talking first about, like, what sounds we want to approach or what things we really like or what things we've been vibing with lately. And then,
like, what kind? Like, how do you do it? Is it just other musicians and things?
Yeah, like, songs we like or albums that we like and think about why we like them and just building on the ideas first. And then we kind of, maybe I'll start with something that I really want to say that I think is a cool thing to say, and we have to figure out how to deliver it. Or he starts with a cool sound arrangement and we want to figure out how to turn it into a whole song. It's an organic process.
And where do you guys do that? I mean, is that something that you do before you get in the studio, or are you pretty much a studio guy?
The cultural conversations are forever, but the actual process is in studio all the time. Yeah, I like to go to work and, like, be at work. You know what I mean? And then be able to leave and be out of work. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. It's a lot of people take it home with them. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do because it's not like I can think of song lyrics all the time, but just as far as, like, committing time to listening to a beat and then, like, writing a song and recording it. You know, I like to keep that part at work so I can be inspired by the rest of my life. And so my life isn't consumed by music. So music kind of consumes my life. You know what I mean?
To play Metro on a Friday night. I mean, we had Tokyo in here not too long ago, and we talked about the Save Money crew doing a Friday night at Metro or Saturday night, whatever it was over the winter time. Mm-hmm. And now to be here on Friday, I mean, it's amazing. That's a big club for any artist to be able to take on. Talk about your relationship with your Chicago audience, because the Save Money crew, you, Joey Purp, you know, Tokyo, you guys have cultivated an audience that's going to follow you. And clubs like Metro are like, yeah, you can have Friday night.
Yeah. I mean, I'm grateful personally to not only to my friends who have put me in a position to succeed, but also to the kids and to the people that listen, because they rock with us, you know what I mean? And they feel like even if they don't make music, a lot of the kids that like our music are aspiring musicians, and that's why they like our music, because they understand and they watched it happen and they made them believers in themselves, you know what I mean? Outside of just believers in us, they feel like they could do it because we did it. And but outside of that, just the fact that we all come from Chicago and a lot of Chicago kids hear our music and feel like it's them saying it, you know what I mean? Because they identify with these situations.
Let me ask you one more question just about, I feel like in this day and age of streaming music and Spotify and Apple Music, that if I'm going to listen to Joey Purp, what else should I be listening to? What artists do you listen to? What's something for the WGN radio audience that you listen to that inspires you?
I get inspired by everything, man. I think from a writing perspective, Velvet Underground, or Lou Reed in particular, is probably one of my most inspiring writers that I listen to. And then, yeah, I guess that's one thing. I listen to all type of stuff, though.
Is that important for you as a writer to be able to take on or to be able to listen to and be inspired by all sorts of genres, not just hip-hop?
Well, yeah, I think that's the beauty of being a writer. I think I'm more of a writer than a rapper, because I think that I just have a way with words. So it's not like I have a way with raps or rhyme. It's a way with words in general. So I just like writing that's really poignant, that, like, pulls at emotion, you know what I mean?
Where do you think you're at? I mean, when you talk about Eye Drops, where are you? I mean, are you already on the point where, I mean, this just dropped last week. I mean, do you see yourself already working on the next project? I mean, how fast do you turn around to start producing new music?
Yeah, I've been thinking about the next project for the last month or two, that since this project's been almost finished, you know what I mean? as far as going and executing it, I feel like I need to live with this project some and just be inspired by the new opinions that people have on me and just the new energy that this project is bringing before I really go into the studio and start putting energy into the music. You know, I feel like it's like a high tide, low tide type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to let the tide build up again how I did before. But I've been thinking about the next project a lot already.
Well, we'll look forward to it. The show is this Friday night at Metro. Joey Perp, some of the Save Money crew. Sunny Digital's opening up. The new album is called Eye Drops. You can get it in SoundCloud, iTunes, all that kind of stuff across the board. Joey Perp, I can't thank you enough for coming in here. And congrats on your success, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All I want to know is what you gon' do when I'm gone. Teachers, policemen, and the preacher. I guess religion is useless and education evil. The
system. Here's a little Joey Perp for you.
Innocent people set us up for failure and teaching us that we not equal. What if they close the police stations and the fire stations and the school is shut down and politicians build this vacant?
All I wanna know is what we gonna do when I got this.
If I see the day when they bury me or my casket closed and could look down at my funeral while my spirit rose, I wonder if I would be remembered as a sinner or a saint or just another dead young victim to bullet holes. If I don't make it or if they take me before my time, I rest assured that through these lines I'll be still alive.
All I wanna know is what they gonna do when I'm gone.
That's some good stuff. Joey Perp, he's gonna be at Metro on Friday night. It's amazing to me, and I say it all the time on this show, but 22 years old. Like, I mean, I was just telling you stories about how I was selling certs at Taste of Chicago when I was 22, man. It just makes me go, oh, man. Like, I mean, to be able to put that together, you know, and the girl's ad with Chance, it's good. You're like, wow, this is amazing. This is coming out of Chicago. This must be, you know, I'm just amazed by it. It's great music. Like I said, Metro at Friday night. We can't go. We can never go to anything.
No.
I'd be there, front and center.
So one of those ones that start at like at midnight?
It probably says it starts at 9, but it doesn't start till midnight.
Roll in after.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I can get, yeah.
Be those
maybe
guys.
Be that guy. Yeah. Oh, here comes Kaufman through the side door after the show starts. No, we should be able to call together the interviews we've had with people, you know, in Chicago who are performing with part of Save Money or just hip hop in general. I mean, we were able to, we talked to Tokyo, like I said, yeah, I love that. That stuff is amazing. Joey Perp stuff is amazing. Saba.
Yeah.
Saba's stuff, the kid from the West Side, great interview with him. Taylor Bennett, Chance's brother, was in here. I mean, it's just the list goes on and on and on of these up-and-coming, smart, conscious rappers who are talking about things that are happening in the city. And if you really want to know, like if you're like, I don't really understand what I read or see or hear, being able to listen to some of the stuff, even the song we just heard right now, it gives you a better understanding of the city we live in and the times we live in, you know, from a 22-year-old kid. I love it. I love it. And I hope to get all Save Money in whenever they come through. Vic Mensa just dropped a brand new mixtape today, right? And Chance, obviously, with Coloring Book. Those are the stars of Save Money. But, I mean, such a strong ensemble. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll get Rob Martyr's news. Coming up, we got to talk with Nick. Nick Houseman's going to be here. Nick is our sort of, I would say, the Downloads wrestling correspondent, right? We've had him on talking about wrestling when Roddy
Piper.
Every show needs one. And he hit me up not too long ago. He's like, hey, I'm doing a podcast with Bret Hart. And I'm like, how do I know that name? Bret the Hitman Hart. The Harts, right? It was Mouth of the South was Jimmy Hart. Wasn't that Jimmy Hart? Oh, I love it. We're going to talk about a little wrestling. Nick's going to fill us in on the world of wrestling, the storylines that are happening, but also about this podcast he's doing with Bret Hart. How cool is that? I want to do a podcast with a wrestler.
Here we come, dropkick, half Nelson, full Nelson, Willie Nelson.
Body slam, suplex, headlock, summer slam, elbow drop, belly flop, cage match, grudge match.
It's me versus he versus he versus he versus he. This is me.
Another great track from Zim, DJ Zim, Beats by Zim. All right, well, like I said, our regular wrestling correspondent here on the download, Nick Hausman, has I think probably has the gig of the year. I mean, who wouldn't want to work with Bret Hart? Nick Hausman joins us now on the line. Nick, how are you, my man?
I'm great, Justin. Man, first of all, compliments for the song. That was awesome. I loved that song before I came on. And yes, thank you. Yeah, I mean, you've got a bit of a dream gig there yourself. I know you're set up real nice with WGN, but getting to work with Bret the Hitman Hart every week is certainly very, very surreal.
Well, tell us about this. Tell us about this gig. How did this come about?
Well, I mean, I've worked with Bret on his podcast for the past 10 the Wrestle Radio, where I get to host my daily pro wrestling news show, WrestleZone Daily.
Right.
Cheap plug. But yeah, no, working with Bret on Wrestling Radio, and then his people were approached by Yahoo Sports Radio to come to podcastarena.com alongside a bunch of other great podcasts, and kind of even expand on the idea a little bit. It's called Bret Hart Radio because it's actually two shows a week where it's not just Bret talking about what's going on, you know, right now in the world of pro wrestling.
Why don't, Pete's going to see if maybe we can get you to a different spot, but we're losing you the maybe it's a bars kind of thing. maybe Nick's calling from the wrestling ring. Maybe that's the bit. All right, I think he's back. Let's try him again. Nick, you there? You there?
Oh, yes. I'm very sorry about this.
No problem. So what I was asking, what I'm interested in is what's the conversation like? I mean, is it just him talking about how many hits to the head he's gotten, or how many wins, how many losses? Like, what is Bret Hart talking about when he podcasts?
Well, it's interesting, you know, because since I talk about the day-to-day business, I get to ask Bret his thoughts on, like, a lot of the current storylines. And, you know, pro wrestling has really evolved so much in the past 20 years or so, you know, the kind of the Bret's away from in-ring competition. And it's really interesting to get his take on the way that guys are wrestling now, the stories that are being told, and getting to kind of compare that to what he did. You know, I mean, he was working with Vince McMahon when he was a younger guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that. You also get to hear Bret, you know, he talks about a lot of his classic matches. And one of the really cool things is, like, since he's Bret Hart, of course, he has a lot of very interesting friends that he's made over the years. And so we've been starting to welcome more of his fellow famous pro wrestling buddies to the show. We just had DDP on, and next week I'm very lucky to get to be on a show with Bret and Jake the Snake Roberts.
What a weird See,
cool,
now you're talking my language here, Nick. Like, I feel like that's yes. that's my area, Jake the Snake.
Yeah, I know, right? And if you guys go find Bret Hart Radio, yeah, I mean, next week we're going to have two episodes with Jake the Snake Roberts. And, you know, that's the thing is, there is so much nostalgia in pro wrestling. Like, pro wrestling fans are lifelong pro wrestling fans, you know, at least to some degree. And so to get to hear these guys that you know and you grew up with, and then they're not just talking about the good old days, you know, like you say, all the hits they took to the head. I mean, they're also getting to talk about, you know, the current product, the guys that are making their own legacies right now, that are going out there and finding different ways to, you know, present the art form of pro wrestling. It's very surreal. It's awesome. It's very, very cool.
Like Nick said, look for Bret Hart Radio, and you can catch up with Nick Hausman and Bret Hart on Bret Hart Radio. Let's talk about some issues. You know, I wanted to get you on earlier. We just missed it. We ran out of time when WrestleMania was in town. You were actually there. Talk about the latest WrestleMania from your vantage point.
Man, 102,000 people crammed into AT&T Stadium in Dallas, Texas, Jerry World, right? And it was amazing. It was electric, you know. This 20 by 20 ring that they've got in the middle of this giant stadium, and then overhead is the, like, biggest flat screen TV in the entire world. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, some people weren't very happy with some of the creative decisions that came out of the end of the show.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, people at the end were a lot of hardcore wrestling fans were not really happy with the Triple H Roman Reigns storyline going into WrestleMania, and it kind of seemed a little predictable. People have been rejecting Roman Reigns for, you know, different reasons, storyline reasons, I think mostly, And so when he walked away cleanly as a champion at the end of the show, it was, you know, it was, there was a lot of booze in the arena. And I mean, this is 102,000 people, biggest WrestleMania of all time. And you've got people leaving the show unhappy. It's a little mind boggling in
how,
a way.
For you, Nick, how often does that happen where, maybe they decide in the storyline that the villain is going to win, or that someone who's unpopular is going to win? I think about the old days when, you know, an Andre the Giant walks away with the win or whatever it is. How often does that happen in wrestling, pro wrestling, where a villain gets to walk away with the title?
Man, you know, that's a great question, because right now, unfortunately, Justin, it happens like all the time. Like, you know, to the point that some fans have really kind of started to experience a little bit of burnout. I mean, there's just been certain characters and storylines that have become kind of rinse and repeat. I mean, I think one of the reasons that people reject Roman Reigns the way they do, and kind of the same way the reason they rejected John Cena the way they did, was because it's the exact same formula that Vince McMahon used for Hulk Hogan in the 80s.
Hmm.
You have this good-looking guy that comes out and he beats people up real easily. You can beat the tar out of him, but he's always going to still be super strong and destroy whoever's in front of him. And, you know, there's the hardcore wrestling fans. Like, you know, you look at WrestleMania 3 that had, you know, Hogan, Andre in the main event. It was Savage Steamboat on the undercard that the real diehard wrestling fans remember, because it was a much more athletic match with a much more intense story that was being told. So there's these really, you know, phenomenal athletes on that are not necessarily in the main event picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because and that's where you kind of get that jarringness with the fans, where they're like, well, I really respect this guy because he can do a million flips and never get winded and jump off the top of the building and all this stuff. And you've got Roman Reigns and Hulk Hogan out here. They throw one big punch and the whole place explodes.
Right,
you know,
right,
it's
right.
You know, that's where, and right now we're very much in a transition period. They just announced that SmackDown's going to go live on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I want to hear about that. So SmackDown's it's going to be on the 19th. It's starting in this month. It's starting later in the month. But July 19th. It's a pretty big move.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've tried this before, because what they're going to do, not that last time they didn't have SmackDown live, but they've done this before where they want to make them separate brands. They're going to have, so right now it's all of the wrestlers are on one big touring brand. They do all the Raw and SmackDown shows. Well, now, sometime here in the next month, they're going to have a draft like the NFL or any other legitimate sport, where all of the wrestlers will be available to be drafted to either the SmackDown brand or the Raw brand. And so you'll have brand exclusive wrestlers. So you'll have like John Cena and Roman Reigns on one show, and then, you know, you're not going to see them on SmackDown because that's not the brand that they're on. And the hope and the goal is to create two standalone products that are very interesting, but with different storylines, and everything is awesome. That's the hope. You know, the last time they did this, SmackDown did a lot of very inventive things, and Vince McMahon always, for whatever reason, I'm actually not too surprised. I mean, it's the mothership, Monday Night Raw. If for whatever reason Raw is not as strong as the other show, he's going to take whatever's working on that other show and put it on his show. And it's kind of a weird creative political mess. I don't know. You do comedy. You know all about weird creative politics and things like that. So,
yeah. I guess it's true. But, I mean, it's a good move, I guess, in the sense that there's going to be so is Monday night's still going to be Raw. Tuesday night's going to be this new kind of SmackDown. So, I mean, it's a good move for wrestling in the sense that they're going to have more space on the dial, if you will.
Well, it'll all be on USA. And, you know, NBC Universal is the parent company for USA. And they've been trying to do a really good job of beefing up USA to make it a ratings juggernaut. And the WWE brings along its millions of wrestling fans. And, you know, it's interesting with wrestling because, like, millions of fans doesn't necessarily equate to advertising dollars necessarily, because advertisers are like, you know, I'm not going to sell a high-end car to a bunch of wrestling fans. No offense to wrestling fans. That's why you see, like, fast food commercials all the time or Snickers in wrestling. And so they're accepting that they're maybe not going to make as much on the ad end, but they are going to bring in all of these millions of viewers on a more regular basis to the USA Network so that it can be viable in the ratings game. And so it's a move, you know, I think the USA wanted to do. And again, you know, we're just at a weird time right now where you have so many new, young, very athletic, innovative, creative wrestlers. And this last generation, you know, what's left of it is, you know, you're trying to mix them together. So hopefully giving these guys two separate places to cultivate what works for them and get to mingle with some of this other talent will be a win for everybody.
Nick Houseman, he covers wrestling for us here on the Download. He's got his new podcast with Bret Hart, which is pretty great.
Sweet.
Where else can we find you, Nick?
Yeah, of course, Bret Hart Radio on iTunes. I am the host of WrestleZone Daily, and I do all the interviews for WrestleZone Radio. So when you're on iTunes, subscribe to WrestleZone Radio and Bret Hart Radio. And that's about it. I'm at WZ Rebel on Twitter. And again, yeah, next week, big week. Bret Hart is going to be welcoming Jake the Snake Roberts.
How
and
about
they
that?
Never wrestled. They never wrestled. Isn't
really?
That weird?
I was going to say,
no.
I thought it would just be like, it just turn into a recount of those guys just kind of beating the snot out of each other, but they never did.
They never wrestled. It's so weird.
Was it because they both were considered villains?
Well, no. I was talking to my buddy who's a better wrestling historian than I am the other night, and he thought it was because they were both good guys at the same time.
Oh, were they good? Jake the Snake was a good guy?
Yeah. I mean, he was like the, you know, he was like your fun drunk uncle, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just remember the Snake.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, people love the Snake, though. Like, there was a period of time where Jake Snake would come out and drop the DDT, put the Snake on somebody, everybody cheer, he hold the Snake over his head. You know, that's... You know, that was before he was stealing, you know, getting in with Miss Elizabeth and Macho Man and all that. So
it's a fine line about who's the villain and who's the hero. I cannot remember. My brain got shady. It's got my memories of pro wrestling as a kid got shady. But I do remember Jake the Snake and Bret Hart. And it's awesome that you're involved with these guys. Nick Houseman, thanks so much for taking us a couple minutes out to talk to us tonight.
Thank you very much, Justin. I apologize that the signal was weak, but we got it together.
We got it together.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right, thanks, buddy. You know, one thing Nick and I were talking about and we forgot to talk about is that this is also a historical moment for wrestling because a WWE Hall of Famer is running for president. Yep.
Who?
Donald Trump. is a Hall of Famer in a WWE. He's done weird kind of cameos, and he was a bad guy, and he actually he's been involved in wrestling.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, jack of all trades.
When I think of who I want as a president, I'm like, who does a good interview with Mean Gene Okerlund? Maybe that's where he's like, he'll grant his White House interviews to Mean Gene. He's probably not alive. I have to, you know, I really let my curiosity lead with this show. That's why I think that at the end of the day, it's a very eclectic show. You have, you know, a rapper from a theater director to politicians to, I do, you know, wrestling included. But it's to a limit, I have to say. Like, I'm trying to be honest with this, and I feel bad because, like, I couldn't remember if Jake the Snake was a villain or a hero or Bret Hart. I know the names, and because it almost sort of jogs the memory of something that I was into as a kid. But I have to be honest; it's fading. Like my interest in wrestling, I love Nick. I think Nick's great, and we've talked to him a couple times on the show. But like talking about wrestlers and wrestling names and what happened at WrestleMania, I'm like, meh. I'm like, you know,
I guess the part that's interesting, I mean, I'm not a big fan of, and I never was, even like when Hulk Hogan was around, I never really got into it. I don't like it now, but like on Monday nights, you know, we're here working and my Twitter feed's blowing up about, you know,
right, what's
Monday
Raw?
Night Raw,
right,
you know? Right, so, I mean, people like, and people that I follow on Twitter, so people that I respect. So I must think, well, maybe I'm missing something. Yeah. Maybe Nick can be the guy that...
Yeah, and he's got a lot of passion.
About
I mean, he's
it.
Got
yeah.
passion, so maybe he fills it in for us. And I'm sure there are listeners out there that have the passion as well. I just, you know, it's pretty cool, and I think there are a lot of wrestling fans, and there's a lot of wrestling media, surprisingly. There's a lot of podcasts and a lot of wrestlers who have found a niche to, since they don't wrestle anymore, to be involved in WWE by doing broadcasts. But yeah, at a certain point, I'm like, I don't know who you're talking about. He's mentioning the Triple H and the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad because to be honest with you and the listener at home, I do like to prepare. You know, it's a four-hour show, and there are some times that I'm like, I do a little bit probably more surface than others. Like
yeah,
with Rob, sure. Robert Falls, I was, you know, I spent my time. I wanted to really make sure that I, but with talking about WrestleMania.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so much time in the day.
I was like, well, that's one I think
I can.
Yeah. And, but I just wonder if that's probably indicative of my curiosity towards that
mm-hmm.
topic. Like, I don't know if I mean, I'm glad to talk. Like I said, I think it's great we have him on because people love it. And Nick is really great and he's very passionate about it. But there's a glaze over point for me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Who won the baseball game today? I mean, I'm much more interested in Steve Gadlin in a frying pan, which is coming up at 10 o'clock.
Yes.
This is what all of Chicago radio listeners have been waiting for. They move from other radio stations for the hour to come here. You can just, you can, if you put your ear up to the window, you can hear like everybody in an instant changing channels to get to 720 WGN for this. And I'm just doing that to rile up the texters who are going to text and go, oh, no, no. The frying pan with Steve Gadlin is up next. I'm very excited. I don't know what this week's idea is going to be, but I know Rob Martyr is excited. Rob, you know, Steve kind of looks up to Rob, almost like a father-son kind of relationship.
We've got kind of a symbiotic thing going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, with me with my nicknames and him with his goofy inventions. I mean, we're panned. We get it. I mean, we're geniuses, and this is the you know, the confines in which we work.
Right.
Nobody understands.
It is. You're tortured geniuses.
Often misunderstood.
Right. 312-981-7200. Tonight, the frying pan begins after 10 o'clock.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot. Frying pan hot. If you want the sizzle, even just a little bit.
It's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Yeah. Gadlin, of course, is the brain behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. He presented his business idea in the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He's giving us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence to pitch it to Mark Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin. I'm happy to be here.
How are things going? I mean, last week we didn't do so well with the reusable corn cob. It got a little testy towards the end, but you're feeling good on a rebound?
You know, again, I think that was basically just a basic misunderstanding of the product. So I'm still keeping that one in my back pocket. And this week, I'll be honest, I almost went straight to Mark with this idea. I was going to call him this afternoon because I'm so confident about it. And then I thought that would kind of break an agreement I have with the WGN listeners.
Right.
So I thought, okay,
that's nice of you.
Frying pan.
That is nice. Yeah. It's a social contract. So at least, but you know, the good news is that you can actually workshop it here and you get a lot of yays. It just really just reinforces what you already know.
Yeah. That's what happens every week. Generally, I look for those yays to reinforce, you know, what I do know about the product. And this one, I think, is such a winner. It's basically giving the people what they want, and I've found a way to make that happen.
All right.
You know, so I'm excited about it.
All right. Well, Steve Gadlin, what's this week's frying pan?
Okay. Well, Justin, let me ask you, what is pretty much everyone's favorite food?
Pizza?
Well, dessert food.
Oh, sorry. Ice cream.
There you go. Ice cream is pretty much a universal favorite. But what's the one thing that really bothers people about ice cream?
It's fattening.
Well, no, it melts.
Oh,
that's
right.
Something that bothers people. In fact, a lot of people avoid ice cream because they don't like that it melts. You know, it kind of gives them this added pressure of having to eat it quickly. So what I've done, I've invented a no-melt ice cream. Mm. It's an ice cream substitute that looks like ice cream, feels like ice cream when you run it through your fingers, has the same texture. and it tastes like many different ice cream flavors. Very customizable as well. It's you get the base, and then you drop in little droplets of flavorings and mix your own flavor and stir it together, and then you have a no-melt delicious ice cream.
Wow. Okay, so what are we calling this?
Well, it's called no-melt ice cream.
No,
and what it is,
ice cream.
Yeah, it's actually, and you're going to love this, it's made out of another food that people love, mashed potatoes.
All right.
So it's mashed potatoes with flavorings added, and of course, not just mashed with a normal potato masher, but mashed to get that very specific ice cream hand feel and mouth feel. And then you add the flavorings yourself. So you buy, you know, a box of the no-melt ice cream, and then you buy separate packets of flavorings, which you can mix and match to your heart's delight. And then because it feels so much like ice cream in your hands, you can scoop it up and put it in a cone, put it in a bowl, make a banana split out of it. Hmm. You can do everything you can do with ice cream. You even keep it in the freezer so it has that cold ice cream feel. But it doesn't melt the way ice cream does.
Okay, no-melt ice cream, which is essentially flavored mashed potatoes.
Well,
there's more to it. It's more complicated than that, but that's the idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so no-melt ice cream. Yeah. All right, 312-981-7200. What do we think of no-melt ice cream? Is that really what you don't like about ice cream, is that it melts? Well, Steve Gadlin here on the Frying Pan has come up with a new concept in which he can create no-melt ice cream. Yay or nay?
Yeah.
What do we think?
And you know what? It's not even that it doesn't melt, but you can buy one carton of no-melt ice cream, and because you can buy all these different flavorings, one kid can have vanilla, another kid can have chocolate, and then maybe a third kid can have vanilla too.
So it's customizable by almost by scoop.
Well, we have chocolate and vanilla are our two customizable flavors.
Just chocolate and vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 312-981-7200. Phone's lighting up here, so we'll let Pete talk to the people, get them on the line. 312-981-7200, and we will return. Steve Gadlin, it's The Frying Pan. It's Friday night. Stay with us.
This is how we'll start. Frying pan hot. Frying pan hot. If you want the sizzle. Even just a little bit, simple as
it is. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight, The Frying Pan, featuring Steve Gadlin, who is the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He won on Shark Tank. He now has a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings ideas to Mark Cuban, he brings them here. Tonight's idea, no-melt ice cream. Steve.
Yeah, so no-melt ice cream is a mashed potato-based ice cream substitute, and it's mashed in such a way that it really gets the look of real ice cream. And when you freeze it and then add one of our flavorings, either a chocolate or a vanilla, what you have is an ice cream substitute that's almost visually indistinguishable from ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And it never melts. You can put it on cones. You can put it in a sundae, put chocolate sauce on it. All the things you can do with ice cream, minus that anxious hurry that you have. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, I better eat this before it melts and drips all over the place. That doesn't happen.
And it's made it's similar to mashed potatoes.
Well, it is made out of mashed potatoes. No peels, obviously. But it's a mashed potato that's mashed with a patented process that creates a fine texture similar to ice cream. So it's not the type of potato you just mash at home. This is using a special patented mashing process.
All right, 312-981-7200. The texts are rolling in. The calls are on the line. Let's get to it. 312-981-7200. Let's get to Ed. Ed, yay or nay on no-melt ice cream?
Hey guys, yay on it. I'm allergic. I'm yay. Yes, absolutely. I've been allergic to dairy ever since I can remember, and so this is great. But my question is, without divulging any of your patent secrets, how are you going to get the potato smell or taste out?
Yeah, great question. Thanks, Ed. How are you going to get the potato flavor out, Steve?
Well, first, some bad news for Ed is our flavorings are actually dairy-based, so this would not be good for someone with a dairy allergy. But second, the flavorings are also incredibly overpowering. So while there may be some residue, potato residue taste, maybe in the aftertaste, the actual mouthfeel and taste, you don't even notice there's potato because there's such strong, powerful sweeteners that we use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, again, a sort of a patented mix of several of the non-sugar sweeteners where very small amounts give you quite a punch.
630 says this is the best idea ever. What a scoop.
That's great.
Right.
That's funny.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
773 says, I think we've got a winner.
Okay.
All right. 847 says, okay, this is not actually that bad. And then dot, 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 and he lost me. So I think that's a, I don't know what at what point you were lost, but that might end up being a nay.
It is. Oh, well, okay.
630 has a question. So it's not ice cream. They do that with ice cream ads, so the ice cream doesn't melt under the lights of a photo shoot, but he's never heard of it actually being a product.
Yeah, so it's not actually ice cream. It's actually mashed potatoes plus flavoring, but it looks just like ice cream.
Okay. All right. Let me keep going here. Hold on. I just lost my place here. 630, who fondles their ice cream? You mentioned that you fondle ice cream.
Well, what I'm trying to explain is this ice cream, the way we mash these potatoes, will give the ice cream the same hand feel as if you were to reach your hand into a bucket of actual ice cream. It'll feel just like it. I'm just trying to express that the texture is very similar to real ice cream.
Okay.
And that hand feel is so important with a good ice cream, especially if you're an ice cream connoisseur like myself. You know, when you buy a new ice cream, you will spend some time with your hand in the box, just really massaging and getting a good physical feel, you know, to understand that texture from a very tactile level. So all I'm saying is, you know, this is a difference. You know, that question is like asking maybe someone who makes beer and someone who just drinks beer. The relationship with the creator is always a little different. You know, if you talk to a real brewer, they spend a lot more time with the hops than someone who just enjoys beer as a hobby.
Right. 773 has a good question. You can only keep potatoes for so long. How long will they will this last in the freezer?
Well, I tell you, a very long time. So because of the way we've increased the surface area on the potato with our patented mashing process, these will last, you know, 6 to 9 months in the freezer before you'll have to buy a new case.
6 to 9 months. Yikes.
Yes. Well, now I challenge you to leave it in the freezer for 6 to 9 hours. It's that delicious.
Right. Oh, 847 clarified. You lost him on mashed potatoes.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Well, you know, one of the things, too, this is I'm describing the product as we would to investors. I don't know that when we go to market, we'd ever reveal that this is mashed potato.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that we'd need to.
Yeah, you wouldn't reveal that it's mashed potato? You would just suggest that it's ice cream?
No melt ice cream, yeah.
Oh. I guess okay. 847 says, resounding yay. Been listening to The Frying Pan for a while, and this is the first one I've heard where I didn't think Steve was a kook.
That's great.
There you go. See? We're getting somewhere here. I had another question here. 312 says, what if you like the fight with melting ice cream? That's part of the fun of it.
Well, maybe for some people that's the fun of it, but I challenge you to find a kid who doesn't cry the second his clothing gets drenched in melting dairy product. You know, so our no-melt ice cream provides all the entertainment of ice cream, some of the flavor of ice cream, all of the texture and visual experience of ice cream, minus that melting problem. And again, I stated this is definitely not for people who need to avoid dairy because our flavorings are dairy-based. But, you know, for people who just can't stand that silly melting that ice cream will give you, this is a real solid product for them.
312-981-7200. What do we think of no melt ice cream? Let's go to Deb on the line. Deb, yay or nay on no melt ice cream?
I have to say it's a no-go. Mm-hmm. Ice cream is supposed to be cold. The texture is supposed to be creamy, hence the cream, dairy product. There's soy-based ice cream out there. There's a lot of different ice creams out there. When I think of ice cream, I think of like a gelato, something creamy, milky. So I would have to say no on this product.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Deb. Deb and I agree. I have a hard time seeing how mashed potatoes and ice cream are the same consistency.
Well, I tell you, it's really more about the visual than it is about the mouth consistency. It's about the visual and the hand feel. But I'll tell you this, too. They do experiments where if you hold someone's nose and make them close their eyes and take a bite into an onion and an apple, they can't distinguish them.
Huh. Really?
So, yeah, very similar here because we recreate that visual so adeptly, you know, and although there's no... You know, there's no cream, and this can be eaten warm. You can even heat it up if you want to. It, you know, it does provide that ice cream experience. And I would wager that if you, you know, gave it to a kid and didn't tell them that it was mashed potatoes,
they'd say
this ice cream is great and it's not melting.
Right.
So they can really take their time with it.
Let's go to Donna. Donna's got a pretty right-on question. Donna, yay or nay, first off, on no-melt ice cream?
No.
Okay.
And I wanted to know how much was it, and does the toppings come with it?
Okay, great. Great question. Thanks, Donna.
Well, you know, maybe I'll win her back with the answer to her question. So a carton, which is about the same size, it's a little less than a pint, of no-melt ice cream, just the base textured product, is $19.95. And now each flavor packet is $4.95.
Okay. So, I mean, that's a little on the steep side, but I mean, you go to Whole Foods and you get less than a pint of Jenny's ice cream, and it's $12, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to think of the luxury we are giving you in that one. It's going to last a very long time if you leave it in your freezer. And two, it will, you know, it's not going to melt on you.
Right. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's take a break and get to Rob Martier for the news. Steve Gadlin, I want to draw a cat for you.com. It's the frying pan. His idea this week, no melt ice cream, a mashed potato like substance that replaces ice cream and gets rid of that melty feeling that we all hate. Steve Gadlin, stay with us. We will continue the frying pan in just a moment. 312-981-7200 is the number to say yay or nay to no-melt ice cream, Steve Gadlin's latest invention. What do you think, Rob? What do you like? I'm not sure.
No-melt ice cream.
Yeah, so it's a no-melt ice cream. It will not melt. It's not actually ice cream. It's a mashed potato. It's mashed potatoes with customizable flavorings that will make it chocolate or vanilla.
I mean, you know, again, with a lot of Steve's ideas, you know, certainly I'd give it a try.
You hear that, Steve? Rob Martier will said he'd give it a try.
Especially, well, and here's the thing, Justin, you can back me up on this one, especially with kids.
Right.
A no-melt ice cream would be a godsend. I could let them have it in the back of the car.
There you go.
On the couch.
Right?
That's
what you're going for, right, Steve?
Well, a lot of kids we're realizing have an allergy to some of the compounds we're using in the flavoring, but if your kid is tested, you know, it's possible that a kid might enjoy this.
I think they should be okay. They're pretty rugged.
All right. Well, there you go.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot. Frying pan hot. If you want the sizzle, even just a little bit.
It's the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight, it's the frying pan. 312-981-7200. My guest, Steve Gadlin, is an inventor, innovator, entrepreneur here in Chicago. He went on Shark Tank with the idea, I want to draw a cat for you.com. He won. He now has a development deal with Mark Cuban. And before he brings his new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download to workshop. Steve Gadlin, tonight, the idea is no melt ice cream. Give us the pitch again.
That's right. So it is an ice cream substitute that gives you all the look and hand feel of ice cream, minus that pesky melting. It's made of mashed potatoes combined with some flavoring. And you know, you put it in the freezer if you want. You can also microwave it if you want, depending on what texture you're going after. Mm-hmm. Add a little bit of the flavoring, stir it up, put on some syrup or bananas or whatever you do with your ice cream. And I dare you to wait for it to melt, because it's potatoes and it won't.
Okay, there are a lot of questions. 312-981-7200. Lot of health questions. So,
okay.
502 says there's ice cream made with pinto beans. It's okay, but it's too expensive and it melts. What's the calories to fat content of the mashed potatoes ice product?
No, that's great. That's a great question. I would say it's very similar to ice cream, unless you add butter. And some people will add butter for flavoring, in which case, obviously, the calories go up. Now, if you eat it without a flavor packet, you're doing yourself a big favor, because those flavor packets not only contain obscene amounts of calories, but a lot of sodium as well. But I'll tell you, that's okay. That's why we eat ice cream. When we eat ice cream, we're giving ourselves a treat. We're not counting calories. But for those of you that are, just to be upfront, this is probably, you know, not as calorie effective as just a bowl of traditional ice cream. But hey, enjoy your melting.
Okay, 312-981-7200. 630 says you won't be able to call it ice cream because it must have a certain percentage of cream to call it ice cream.
Well, you know, I think we're just going to go ahead and call it that. It's called no melt ice cream.
Okay. 708 says neither vanilla or cocoa beans are dairy based. So why is the flavoring dairy?
Well, because a potato doesn't give you that natural creamy, you know, sensation. So our flavorings are actually butter based flavorings, so you do get that cream sensation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to, the flavoring is what makes it an ice cream substitute. Otherwise, it's just mashed potatoes.
Oh, okay. All right. 312 has a question. You go ahead and sell your no-melt ice cream and you don't tell people what it is, and you're setting yourself up for lawsuits. Diabetics can get sick from this. Major no.
Well, I don't know about that. I think what I'm setting myself up for is a lot of delighted customers. Lawsuits come when customers taste it and go, yuck. But I think they're going to be pretty excited and happy to welcome no-melt ice cream into their lives. It's a real lifestyle changer, too. I mean, suddenly you can take a carton of the stuff on a picnic with you and not worry about it melting in the sun while you finish your corn and bananas.
Right. Okay. Well, all right. Okay. 312-981-7200. I'm going through the text. There's a lot that I want to save for the end.
Sure.
773 says, so am I hearing this right? $25 for ice cream?
I'm Dennis Muzin.
Oh, here we go.
Well, yeah, I don't remember the pricing I quoted. I believe it was $19.95 for the carton. And now the flavor packets are optional, of course.
Right.
But that's not $25 per serving of ice cream. That's, you know, you can... Well, for some people, it's one serving, but for others, you can split up a carton and, you know, share it with your friends and family over 6 to 9 months.
630 has a good question. It says, why just chocolate and vanilla? It seems like you may be able to get interesting combinations of flavors, some that you can't get with ice cream, that would make it more sellable.
Well, I'll tell you what, and this is top secret because this won't be available with launch, but not only are we working on chocolate and vanilla, but one of my favorites, a chocolate vanilla swirl.
Okay, well, there you go. That doesn't seem like it's that top secret, but... Okay, 312-981.
It's called marketing. You know, it's
right,
probably
yeah.
The way we market.
Yeah, okay. I guess that makes a little bit of sense. 312-981-7200. All right. Hold on 1 second. Just jumped up. No melt ice cream sounds gross. How many chemicals does it take to make potatoes taste like ice cream?
Well, not as many as you'd think. And again, I don't want to stress the taste so much. I've been very careful to say it's really the look and the hand feel that give the impression of ice cream. So, you know, we're not expecting you to close your eyes and think you have ice cream in your mouth. But we are expecting you, if you close your eyes and just run it through your fingers, or close your eyes and just look at it, that you'll think that it's ice cream.
Could this product, this is a 630, could this product be made with mashed carrots or maybe mashed sweet potatoes or other mashed vegetables too?
You know, I don't know. I think if you look at mashed potatoes, that looks like ice cream. Mashed carrots looks like, you know, baby food. So, I don't know. It's nothing we've tried. I don't think we will anytime soon.
Okay. I got a yay that says this is a perfect way to get kids to eat their vegetables.
Well, and again, though, I want to stress, we did have a few allergic reactions with young children. Because it might not have been an allergic reaction. It might have been a reaction to the high levels of sodium in the flavor packet. So, you know, as with a lot of the foods I invent, they're really targeted toward people of 50 pounds or heavier.
This is the first I've heard of it, the high level of sodium.
Yes.
That's new. That's something that's in this product as well?
Well, the flavor packets are similar to what you'd find in a ramen. So it's, you know, those are also high sodium. We're using that as our base, to be honest. And then there's a butter lay on to get that creaminess. But it's really, if you imagine melting a pat of butter over a ramen noodle packet, that'd be a similar makeup to our flavor packets.
All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. And like I said, I got a lot of good stuff to read in the more colorful part of our frying pans, usually at the end. So that'll be coming up. That's the stuff that's a little bit more of the thick skin stuff that we've been working on. Steve Gadlin is the innovator, entrepreneur, and inventor behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He brings his new ideas here every single Friday night at 10 o'clock. We will continue the frying pan right after this break. Stay with us.
If you're on your mark, this is how we'll start. Frying pan hot, frying pan hot. If you want the sizzle, even just a little bit.
It's the frying pan here on the download on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Steve Gadlin is with me. Steve Gadlin is the inventor, innovator, entrepreneur behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He won on Shark Tank. He's got a development deal with Mark Cuban, so before he brings new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download to workshop. Tonight, no melt ice cream. One last elevator pitch, Steve?
Yeah, no melt ice cream is an ice cream substitute that looks just like ice cream, feels just like ice cream in your hands, but it doesn't melt. And that's because it's made out of mashed potatoes in combination with some ramen-style flavor packets that we provide at an additional cost to give it, you know, a similar flavor to ice cream as well.
Okay.
So great for adults who just don't want their ice cream to melt all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to wrap up here. 312-981-7200 is the number. And I want to get to some of the more colorful texts. But first, let's go to Francis. Francis, yay or nay on no-melt ice cream? Francis, you there?
Yeah.
So, Francis, do we like it? Yay or nay on no-melt ice cream?
No. Sorry.
All right. Why no?
I just don't like the look of it. I mean,
well
I like how it mainly
like
focuses on the look rather than the taste, like you said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Steve?
Well, but again, did you hear the example about if you bite into an onion with your eyes closed and your nose pinched, how it's just like an apple?
Well, yeah.
So does that change your mind?
I mean, not really. I mean, it's not like I'm going to be eating it with my eyes closed.
Yeah, right.
Well, actually, we suggest you do.
Well, that's new, Steve. Thanks, Francis. Thank you. That's something that we did not think about earlier in the frying pan. We didn't know this was a blindfold experiment. All right, let's get to some of the texts here. 312-981-7200. 630 say, who's fondles ice cream? Dumb. 724
again,
says
we're talking about a master ice cream maker. Well, of course they fondle the ice cream.
Right. Okay.
But go ahead. Sorry.
724 says Steve's brain is made from mashed potatoes.
great. That's funny. Yeah.
724 says, Steve is a genius. Not so much you, Justin.
Mm. Oh, that's, well, yeah, hey, you know, there's a caller that's on my level.
Right.
And I know, you know, you might not come across as a genius, but you're very special in your own way. So
thank you.
Hope that caller.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
630 mm-hmm. says, well, it's a pretty bad idea, but it's better than the hot dog scarf.
The hot dogs. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So that's good, right?
That's great that they're listening and remembering.
This is a great 708 says, I want to draw a cat throwing up no melt ice cream.
Hmm. Well, that's a business they can start.
Yeah,
I encourage them to purchase that domain.
Okay. 847 says, I was right. This is dumb. I don't know if they had a conversation before they came in here. That's kind of a strange. Maybe they were in their head or something.
I don't know. They're probably talking about an earlier thing.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. 262 says his idea stinks and he's creeping me out.
I don't know how I'm creeping them out. I apologize if I'm coming across as creepy. I'm just a man who likes to fondle his ice cream. If that bothers you, don't picture it.
847 says, can we give this guy to ISIS?
ISIS cream? No melt ISIS cream? Is that a...
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm... no interest in joining ISIS.
262 says, yay on the idea, but my only worry is that Steve's next idea will be sugarless cotton candy made from Owens Corning pink fiberglass. Not a bad idea.
I'm taking the yay.
Right.
Now, I'll admit, I've been tempted to take a bite of fiberglass before, so it's funny that this person brings it up, but I would not recommend it. I would never sell a product that contains small, invisible glass pieces
and
market it as a food.
773 says, how in the H-E double hockey sticks am I supposed to connect this to my phone?
That's a great question. I'm glad someone brought that up. It's not in the no-melt ice cream, but the container is Bluetooth compatible, and it will alert your phone when you're running low.
All right.
So you can head to the store and buy another carton. Thank you for bringing that up, caller. I forgot to mention that feature.
708 says it sounds gross. 724, this is a good one. Dominic's carried no-melt ice cream, and that's why they're out of business.
Well, they didn't carry this formula. This is patented.
Okay.
Mashed potatoes and ramen powder. You can't sell that unless you hold my patent.
219 gets real, Steve. And I say this as a warning in advance because I know that you're working on thick skin, but this is pretty personal.
Yeah. Okay.
219 says, this guy needs to get a life. Leave things alone. Oh, my God. He is running his 15 minutes of fame into the ground. Just stop it, dude.
Yeah, I'm not here for 15 minutes of fame. What I am here is to build a legacy of products that improve the lives of others. Now, I know I'm going to have some hits and some misses, hopefully more hits than misses, but I would never hit my misses, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, all right. 847, this is Sue from Glenview. She always gives you good stuff here. She says, I assure you one carton is all I'd ever need to buy because it would last forever in my freezer.
That's great.
I think she's not going to eat it. That's what she's saying.
Ah, okay. Well, that's the right of every buyer.
Right.
To pace themselves at their own speed.
Right. Why are you giving this jerk any airtime? We've heard that before.
We have heard that before. Yeah.
It seems to be recurring. It might be the same texters. Yeah. It's just like this.
Yeah.
This guy's an insult to WGN listeners. Does he live in his parents' basement? Oh my God. I love the idea. Now we
there
can
we go.
Yeah, well. Yeah, they say, I love the idea. Now we can truck the no-melt ice cream through Africa's harshest heat and give the starving kiddos a real taste of Americana. Think about that.
You know, I don't want to get political with the product, but that has crossed my mind that it is something we can bring to warmer countries without fear of needing excess refrigeration.
262 says, looks great,
I don't know
but
the children in the South have ever had ice cream, to be honest.
Well,
and this brings it to them.
Okay, well. 262 says, looks great, tastes like crap. Great pitch.
I did not say that it tastes like crap. It's a new flavor. You know, when people first tried a rutabaga, it took them a while to get used to it.
Right.
But now it's one of the most popular fruits.
219 says, this guy's on crack. How many of these ideas has Steve Gadlin invented that the guy from Shark Tank has accepted and will use?
Well, so the only one I've ever brought to him is the cat drawing. Now, I've done a few pitches here on WGN, but since we haven't gotten a resounding yay on any of them, I have not yet brought him another product. And at this point, it's been a while. There'd be some reintroductions necessary. You know, it'd be difficult to get his ear. But as soon as I have that confidence I need coming out of this segment, I think I'll be ready to knock on doors again.
219 says, genius borders insanity, but you're just insane.
Okay.
847 says, I used to really hate your show. It's gotten a lot better, but this guy's really ruining it.
Well, you know, that's that person's opinion.
And then Johnson ends it with 815 saying, why is everyone being so negative? At least he's out there trying to do something. He's trying to make a change. That's a good point. That's a good point. Everybody who texts in about how bad Steve is, how much of a jerk he is, how untalented he is, how, you know, just how much of an idiot he is.
Yeah.
How much, you know, but all those things. At least you're out there doing something. You're trying to do something every single week. You take the time to come up with these ideas.
Yeah, and what I ask each of those texters and callers is, what have you invented this week? You know? So that's maybe what I'll start asking them when they call before they even give their comment. And then I'll give a yay or nay to their invention, and then they can give their comment. Maybe that's a new format we can use.
Well, 312 says, I don't really get it. I like that ice cream melts, but you know what? I'd try it. So
well,
there you go.
You know, what I can say about this week, Justin, is while I don't think it was an overall yay, there were fewer nays.
That's right. I got to get, you know, at the beginning, it felt like people were interested. And then, you know, towards the end, I just read all the ones that weren't.
Yeah.
So actually, I'm not sure if that's fair because there were a lot of nays at the beginning.
You got my hopes up.
Yeah, I got your
hopes. You really got my hopes up. But I'll say there were fewer nays. I felt fewer nays this week, and that's called progress.
Steve Gadlin is the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He comes on every Friday night at 10 o'clock with the frying pan to pitch a new idea to Download Nation. No melt ice cream probably needs to go back to the drawing board, mostly because for a lot of things. Steve,
I'm going to get away from food products next week.
I think
next
that might be smart. Yeah, that might be smart. Steve Gadlin, have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next Friday.
Awesome. Take care, Justin.
Well, that's going to do it tonight for the Download. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez coming up next. Also tonight, and for Bubala, 2 o'clock, another episode of Carmen Collins. How about that? Excited. They're going to be talking to a guy who plays video games for a living. It's an esports guy. I love that. I was telling Craig a little bit earlier that there was a kid in this area. I think he lives in Arlington Heights or something like that. It's one of the top five video game players in the country. He's like maybe 16 years old. He might be a little bit older now. He's making millions. They do these tournaments and $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, they go and they play video games to win.
They'll play against other teams. I saw a Vice Sports documentary on this. And they literally pack a United Center venue with all these other techno geeks play video games. It's unbelievable.
Hey, man.
Absolutely. Go for it. But I was amazed.
I mean, I give him a lot of credit.
Let's just remember that you were 21 and selling certs at Taste of Chicago.
Oh, man, you got to bring me down. Why did I sell certs? I should have kept playing Madden. I would have played Madden. I would have won at least be worth about $25,000 by now. Be winning. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.